Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Let's try this again. For those of you who were sort of left dangling last night by my abrupt disappearance, please understand it was nothing more dire than a thunderstorm that rolled through and took down my series of tubes. You know, I have a feeling the internet would be significantly more reliable if it was a big truck. But it isn't. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes that is apparently more than susceptible to lightning strikes. What it boiled down to, I later found out after much the swearing and so forth, because I like to swear while I work, was that apparently one of our several uninterruptible power supplies that runs this joint has gone to its long home. It has earned its just reward, and it is dead as a stump. So what happened is the lightning took down the power. The uninterruptible power supply's battery did not kick in, and screw us. But the thunderstorm continued for quite some time, and as a consequence, couldn't keep the inner tubes going. With any luck, that will not happen tonight. And I say with any luck because it has happened all afternoon long. Okay? It just has. See, we're getting, because there's no such thing as global climate change, and there's no such thing as anthropogenic global warming, we're having August in June right now. The stuff that we expect here in the hills and hollers in August is happening, yes, in June. And as a consequence, we're getting pop-up August-like thunderstorms created by convection currents and the like that raise holy hell for a while and then quickly move on and disappear. Wonderful, huh? But at any rate, I'm back. We're together again. For some reason or other, a little glitch in the website is preventing me from joining you in the chat room. So my apologies to those of you who would otherwise be seeing my smiling cyber countenance there. But, you know, these things happen. We'll get it all sorted out. Let's see, a little program note for you. I wanted to let you know, A, that the current fundraising has more or less gone flat, and I understand that. I more than understand that. As we move toward getting all of this business taken care of. I've already got the ball rolling, so with any luck at all, cross your fingers, throw salt over your shoulder, don't walk under ladders or step on cracks. We'll get this taken care of one way or the other. We will. We really, really will. But at any rate, no, totally separate program note. Coming up after the 4th of July, 4th of July weekend, after the 4th of July weekend, we've got something really special happening. Many of you who have been with us for quite some time may well remember the considerable talents and manifest just plain old-fashioned intelligence and decency of Dr. Bill O'Brien. He was with us doing a show for quite some time until he got loaded up with so many duties at Concord University's Beckley campus out at the Irma Bird Center that it simply became physically impossible to do a show. But the horn never strays far from his thoughts, his hopes, his ambitions, and his ideals. And so Dr. Bill asked me the other day, he's got a grant program going on that concerns teaching the history of the basic founding of the United States of America, okay? Real history, with real facts, not the made-up baloney bogus BS that Glenn Beck fans, whose Constitution of the United States exists only in their heads, espouse. No, real history, real original source documents, all of that stuff. So this grant program that Dr. Bill has is going to be putting on a series of magnificent lectures over the course of a week. And I mean, they are going to be, magnificent. They're going to be informative, and they are going to be days long. All day long, every day for a week. What that means, and this is where the horn comes in. Dr. Bill asked me if the horn, because he knows, Dr. Bill knows my vision for what broadcasting must mean in the future, in part leveraging the internet itself. Dr. Bill asked me if I could come out there to the lectures and broadcast via the horn's stream. Broadcast the lectures, and I said, not only can I do that, if we've got sufficient internet connectivity, we'll even do video. So, coming up, where's my piece of paper? See, I couldn't do this if it wasn't a real schedule of the coming event. It will begin on Tuesday, July the 6th, after everybody's had a rousing good 4th of July holiday. We will come back on Tuesday, July the 6th, and there will be a series of lectures that take place Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the following Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Some of those things will take up the better portion of the day. For instance, on Tuesday, July the 6th, we will start at 11 a.m. and go to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On Wednesday, we'll start at 8 a.m. and go to 8:15 p.m. On Thursday, it will be in an evening program, 6:45 to 8:15 p.m. Friday will be 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. So that'll leave me open, hopefully, for a Friday on the front porch. Then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday are similar. This is going to be, and I'm not, if you've heard the Glenn Beck clips, and I cite him because, the Flush Flemball, just babbles out of his opiate haze on current events. And, Michael the Savage Wiener has become so mentally damaged, cerebrally damaged, that sometimes he doesn't make sense at all, to the extent that any of these right-wingers make sense, and that is a long way down. When the right-winger doesn't even make right-wing sense, you know, the flame is pretty well out. But Glenn Beck I cite because Glenn Beck gets in front of a television camera every day and behind a radio microphone and makes up American history. And he has an especial fondness for making stuff up about this, how this country came to be. You know, Joseph and Mary took a camel to the seaport, and they got on a boat, and she got pregnant with the child of God while they were crossing the Atlantic, and they landed at Plymouth Rock, and the Indians became pilgrims. And they all agreed that they were going to base the formation of a nation on the baby that Mary would give birth to, and she gave birth to the little baby Jesus, who became the entire foundation of the formation of the United States of America. God bless America. Now let's all stand and sing. Right? That is, in essence, the story of America as told by Glenn Beck. This is This is that's why what's going to be going on down at Concord University is so important. Because this is real history. This is derived from original source materials. Words really written and spoken by the people who wanted to set this country on its path. And, you know, you can agree with them or disagree with them, but you have to have their real words in front of you. There won't be anything in there about Thomas Paine criticizing Acorn. Or John Adams declaring that that liberal Islamo-fascist communism was the evil that they were setting out to destroy. And in the discussion of the founding of the United States of America, and I know this will come as a complete surprise to the damned wingnuts, Ronald Reagan isn't even there. No kidding. So for a solid week, the programming here will not be its normal schedule. Instead, it will be absolutely packed, bulging at the walls with content. And I think you're going to want to be here for it. And I think it's going to, if you give it a chance, if you give it a try, you will find yourself positively stunned by what you are hearing. Not stunned because you didn't necessarily know it, though there will be stuff that you don't know that you will learn, but stunned because it is so very much a different story from that pablum which has been force-fed to us over the generations. Stuff that's real as opposed to imagined. Because if nothing else, this little band of friends and neighbors that we are, if we can be dedicated to one thing, I would prefer that it be that we are dedicated to facts, that we are dedicated to an absolute grounding in reality. And there's going to be a lot of reality spoken between July the 6th. And July the 14th. How about that? It will begin a couple of days after the announcement of American independence, and it will close on Bastille Day. The irony is not lost upon me. So that little programming note is out there for your consideration. And I hope you will take part. Chat rooms available on our Ustream stream, and of course the regular chat room, the Horn chat room, will be available. And who knows what kind of new listeners there will be, because the entire region is going to be invited to view this stuff. And I think who knows? Some wingnuts might even come and play. You never know. You never know. But we'll be nice to them. We'll be nice to them because we are guests. So I just wanted you to have that information for your scheduling needs as we go forward. By the way, the one nice thing about being knocked off the air by pop-up thunderstorms blowing through here on this, the 24th day of June, is that you don't have to listen to me gripe about being broadcasting live from the Head On Radio Network sauna, and I've put away my little coniferous self-flagellating branches, and there's no, it's nice, it's actually cool and comfortable in here for the first time in quite some time. So that the thunderstorm was a bit of there was an upside to it, trust me. Now, where does that all leave us? Yesterday, I had barely gotten started with prayer meeting, and it was all sort of gathering energy, and then fizzle, done. So that leaves us starting fresh, and it leaves us starting fresh in a number of places. It's always nice when I find other people whose opinions I respect echoing and agreeing with mine. You know, I asked the question a couple of days ago, why did General McChrystal decide to give an interview to Rolling Stone magazine? You know, has he never heard this guy? This is a guy who was at West Point in the mid-70s. Tell me he never heard of Hunter Thompson. Because Hunter Thompson did a great deal of his early writing for Rolling Stone. And I suggested that maybe that thing was all sort of a self-inflicted wound. I guess the general's equivalent, the four stars on the shoulder board equivalent of taking out your weapon and drilling yourself through the foot to get out of the battle. General McChrystal needed a way out because he had lost his nerve. And lo and behold, what do I find? But over at Crooks and Liars, my good acquaintance, John Amato, opining the very same thing. Did McChrystal tell Rolling Stone Obama's advisors are clowns because he wanted out of Afghanistan? John Amato writes, I think he isn't that dumb, McChrystal, and just wanted out of Afghanistan altogether since his planning has failed completely. He can now be hailed a right-wing nut hero by the fringers for calling out the president, Joe Biden, and the Afghan team when he goes on a speaking tour of the American Enterprise Institute and other Tea Party events. I thought, you know, good on you, John Amato, because the same thing was going right through my mind. And let me share something fascinating with you, if I may, please. And that is this. You know, I get a lot of wingnut stuff from various people pitching right-wing foolishness and whatnot. Well, I got one the other day about General McChrystal. And as odious and noxious and revolting as this crap is to read, you know, and what these are pitches for, because there's a, what maybe you don't realize, there is an entire infrastructure that exists that the left, please, I make myself laugh every time I say the left, people who are normal, the normal people, we're not the left, we're the normal people. The vast right-wing conspiracy, the wing nuts, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, and booger eaters have an entire infrastructure of public relations and guest pitching, and they provide a total underpinning infrastructure for any sort of expert that your average wingnut host. And, you know, it's not just Rush and Hannity and Beck and all of those people. The infrastructure includes little right wingnut stations, and every little right wing station in, you know, Busted Knuckle, Arkansas has a guy who goes and does remotes at the bowling alley. And he does a wingnut show from 9 to noon every day. And he inveighs against the communist Obama and all of that crap. And there is a full infrastructure to make sure that that talentless bastard will never have to fill more than 5 minutes by himself. And in this case, I was pitched the other day this creep named Jim Kinney, K-I-N-N-E-Y, like the shoe store. Who knows? And Jim Kinney wanted to come on the program to explain that General McChrystal should be fired. Well, and listen to this, because this is informative. This is a little walk through the spider-webby, creepy, rat-infested, bat-hanging, dark, nasty, miry, mucked-up world that is the right-wing mind. Jim Kinney is apparently a former Navy captain retired, and of course, he must have sailed a battleship upon the ocean blue. No, he's a retired Navy chaplain. Jeez. But this pitch goes as follows, and you're going to find this fascinating. The pitch goes as follows. As Americans continue to digest the shocking quotes from General Stanley McChrystal, Commander... You kind of got to do this all in a sort of Ted Baxter-y voice, you know. As Americans continue to digest the shocking quotes from General Stanley McChrystal, Commander of the Forces in Afghanistan, shock is meeting anticipation. This is all before the firing resignation or whatever it was. Is meeting anticipation for the results of a hastily called meeting in the White House. Upon learning of McChrystal's comments about the real enemy being in the White House, the general was immediately ordered back to Washington for a one-on-one meeting with the president. Of course, the thing is, as John Amato noted, this guy has an instant entree into the right-wing not-speaking circuit, and they have millions of dollars to pay for him to come and talk about the enemy in the White House. Because, you see, wingnuts believe that, too. He's a communist Islamo-fascist, that's what he is. Marvelline, I've never seen such a communist Islamo-fascist Kenyan in the White House before. I don't know what our country's come to. Once word got to McChrystal that his statements that appeared in a Rolling Stone interview, a very carefully worded apology, was released. All of this is what makes the commentary from Captain Jim Kenny, U.S. Navy ret, very interesting. Kenny is also a clean TV political and military analyst, and the consequences of what he is recommending would be newsworthy for sure. In a line from an old movie, Al Pacino reassures an obsessing client about things the latter had done which bothered him. Pacino said, "You did it. Now live with it." If Kenny's take could be summed up with one line, that might be it. Kenny, like many, believes that McChrystal needs to be fired, but the other aspect to his take is that McChrystal should not apologize for his comments. In short, he should go out a martyr. Kenny is available for interviews to discuss the likely implications. He should go out a martyr. If you ever needed proof that the right has forgotten the meaning of martyr... The original Christian martyrs, of course, were had giant stakes crammed up their backsides, were dipped in pitch, and then set afire to light the Vatican gardens, okay? Before there was a Vatican. At that point in time, it was just a field across the Tiber River in Rome. When you've got a giant stake crammed up your backside, and you've been dipped in pitch and are set afire... Then it is safe to say that if you're doing it for the sake of your religion, you are at that point a martyr. Getting called on the carpet for saying that the President of the United States is an idiot when you hold 4 stars on your shoulder boards does not constitute martyrdom. But do you see that in the fervent, fulminating, thin gray settlings that slosh between the ears of your average teabag and patriot? It's martyrdom, because we all know he was born in the Kenya, and his daddy was an Islamo-fascist communist. And America's going to hell. And he's a-taking us there, that one is, that there Obama. Did you know that if you take the M, the A, and the O out of Obama, which spells Mao, you get uh-oh Mao? No, you don't. Marvelline, come spell me something. He is. He's just like Mao. The McChrystal flap by Captain Jim Kenny, U.S. Navy, retired. How should the president respond to the comments made by General McChrystal about his civilian leaders in a long interview with Rolling Stone magazine? This may surprise you. President Obama should fire him. General McChrystal is the leader of our efforts in Afghanistan, and in that position has the unique responsibility to ensure our policies in that war do not increase the risks of our young men and women. This includes fighting to overcome the politically correct rules of engagement established by the president's men that hamper our military and put them at grave risk, as recent casualty reports from Afghanistan confirm. Bless my soul. I seem to remember back during the tormented 8 years of the godforsaken Bush administration, when we had mounting casualties in Iraq from IEDs going off like corn kernels in a popcorn popper, and bodies coming home in boxes that we weren't allowed to see. I seem to recall that when we complained about the mounting deaths in Iraq, the right wing was ready, Johnny on the spot, with the pat answer, well, we're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here. I remember that. Do you remember that? Because I remember that. Well, what happened here? What happened with Captain Jim Kenney, U.S. Navy retired? Suddenly now, the same strategy that was used in Iraq that got a whole bunch of American boys and girls dead is a function not of fighting them there so we won't have to fight them here, but instead is a function of, what is it, politically correct rules of engagement established by all the president's men that hamper our military and put them at grave risk. So I guess we're not fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here. Instead, we've got, according to Captain Jim Kenney, chaplain, retired, according to this creep, we're in Afghanistan because, and all of our soldiers are in tutus, toe dancing all over the whole blooming country, passing out daisies and little packages of sunflower seeds and, I don't know, being halfway to Moonies or something. What should the general do? He should not apologize. He must not take one step backwards. He must stand up and oppose the wicked and dangerous power. Wicked? Wicked like in The Witch with the house on top of her? Wicked? Wicked? He must stand up and oppose the wicked and...
I'll get you my pretties and your little lithium reserves, too.
He must stand up and oppose the wicked and dangerous policies of this administration that are needlessly endangering our troops on the ground. Hell's bells, Captain Kenney. You want him to come home? That's what it sounds like. Oh, no. He wants the dog to be let off the leash. He wants to just let slip the dogs of war and cry havoc and kill more civilian Afghan women and more civilian Afghan children and have more feuding clan-related deaths and more predator drone bombings of weddings and funerals and so forth. That's what we need in Afghanistan. In other words, General McChrystal must play the courageous role of martyr and get a big steak stuffed up his backside and be dipped in pitch and lit on fire for that Kenyan Islamo-fascist communist's amusement on the lawns of the White House. No, he didn't say that part. I did. He has displayed physical courage to lay down his life for the nation. Especially when he was covering up the death of Pat Tillman. That took a lot of courage. Now he must demonstrate the moral courage to sacrifice his career for the good of the nation. The nation needs to know how poorly the civilian leadership charged with defending our country is performing.
Yeah, because the civilian leadership of our country that started all of this business, they sure had them some military experience to rely on, didn't they? Five deferments worth, didn't you have there, Dick? Richard B. Dick Cheney before he Dick Hugh Cheney? Yeah, the shot in the face.
I am sure that the general's opinions are shared by the vast majority of our military.
Really? You're sure? Captain Kenney, chaplain, retired? You're sure? How are you sure? How many of you asked, Captain Kenney? How many of you asked?
He must, at the cost of his career, give them a public voice.
Yeah, because nobody in Afghanistan wants to come home. You know, when men and women leave each other in the depths of torrid relationships in Afghanistan, they look at each other and they say, well, we'll always have Kabul. because they love being there. They love being in Afghanistan. They just love walking down a road and not knowing where the IEDs are. They love it. It's, oh, well, Kabul in June, Paris in the spring, child's play. Kabul in June is what you want. So, it is, I would say, educational to, from time to time, look at the way that the right wing views such situations. Because, well, the right wing will always politicize ahead of patriotize. And it is the fact that they have couched their politicizations in such steamy, stinking, rank attempts at patriotism, phony patriotism, last refuge of scoundrels patriotism, that in many ways puts us where we are. Other things put us where we are as well. A Supreme Court ruling today that you might find interesting on the way. It is 29 minutes before the hour. We are well into this Thursday evening edition of The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We'll be back with your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Learn it, know it, use it. We'll be back with The Horn.
Said it was your duty, yours to fulfill. You joined the peacetime army, it's no longer a drill. Take a look around, if you have any doubts. To free the world from tyranny is what this is about. And they say it's gonna take some time. Every day there's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. To hold you to a standard themselves they can't sustain. And at home, the funders start to spin. Politicians and oil men cash in. Wheels in office cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and the poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, fire on the earth, time to tell the truth. What is this worth? And the children that today are playing games, conscription, tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night.
Corporations get in line, there's contracts to erase. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
Ain't that the damn truth from his disc, Accessory to the Crime? That's our good friend John Kuntz. And just as a sort of a postscript or a little bow wrapped around the whole Afghanistan thing, let me heartily encourage you to run over to headonradionetwork.com and check out Reverbo's latest post, A Cavalcade of Crazy, explores some slip-ups. Some slip-ups. You know what a favorite film, because I think Reverbo shares this as well. I'm pretty well convinced that the wingnuts actually think that Dr. Strangelove is a documentary with a happy ending. And Reverbo begins his latest commentary with a quote from, of course, General Buck Turgidson in the war room with the big board.
Mr. President, I don't think it's quite fair to condemn a whole program because of a single slip-up, sir.
Go have a read. You'll be glad you did. By the way, if you want to comment, for the time being, log in with your Facebook account to comment on postings at headonradionetwork.com. Afghanistan. Imagine it. It's Afghanistan in June. The poppies are blooming. The distant sounds of crackling machine gun fire, AK-47 rounds popping the dust nearby, mimic the nearby crackling of your camel dung fire as he looks into her eyes and she looks into his. Over a dinner of scrawny chicken with a few feathers still on, marinated in an earthy yogurt, foodies, broiled over that said camel dung fire. By God, that's romance! And indeed, we'll always have Kabul. Let's go see what's cooking on the phones, if anything. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, for all those listeners below the age of consent, please cover your ears for a moment.
Oh, let's not drop any F-bombs, if we can help it. Not this early in the program, but yeah, go right ahead.
Message to Captain, what was his name?
Captain Jim McKinney, U.S. Navy RIT.
Yeah. Captain McKinney, shut up.
Yeah.
Okay, kiddies, you can
You can come back. You can come back out from under the bed now. Shut the up.
It particularly infuriates me to realize that this guy and I pretty much have the same opinion of Afghanistan, but for entirely different reasons. My reasons are, I submit, sane. Being that I find the whole counterintelligence philosophy to be based on the strategy formulated by the French in Indochina and by the Americans in Vietnam to be somewhat lacking in success, to put it mildly. It reminds me of, seeing somebody, fishing somebody out of quicksand and then watching them turn around and jump right back into the bog.
And loving the bog, apparently.
Yeah.
And blaming drownings in the bog on the fact that we have politically correct leadership in Washington that has politically correct rules of engagement.
And somebody
needs, excuse me?
Somebody needs to sit Barack Obama down and hand him some books on the Hindu Kush and tell him, bud, you need to read these suckers, because the only way we can have any kind of good solution is pick up our toys and leave that country, choose up empires, choose up countries, choose up everybody. Just ask directions.
Yep. Goodbye. See you later. Enjoy your anarchy. Have fun.
Yeah, not to mention their incredibly high heroin addiction rate, which is now being transferred to our soldiers. Whoopee!
No, you take our land, we give you monkey for your back.
Yeah, exactly. These people have a land that is the only land that would have been comparable to it would have been the Superstition Mountains in the U.S. That couldn't be conquered either. 13 men held it against an entire army.
And that doesn't. Well, look, anytime you attenuate your supply lines, you know, by 14,000 miles or so, and you're paying $500 a gallon for gasoline, it ain't going to end well.
On top of that, Petraeus's own report that he came out with before this whole thing with Miss Crystal came up with, he did a report on Afghanistan. And do you know how we're getting our supplies into Afghanistan?
Camels? Mules?
We're paying the warlords and the Taliban.
Oh, yeah, right.
HB. So, in other words, we're paying the very people we're fighting money to fight against us.
Welcome to Saturday Night Wrestling in Kabul.
Yeah. This is just Twilight Zone. It's insane.
Anybody want to know how you spell screwed in Pashtun? Afghanistan, Mr. President.
Yes, exactly. We need to say, okay, we won, yay, goodbye, and turn around to say to Germany or France or the U.N. and say, hey, here's a boatload of money, rebuild Afghanistan. We're not going to have anything to do with it.
You know, the thing that bothers me, Susan, is if in fact, and there is some indication that there might be some good to be said for the General McChrystal coming out of the Lottie in the chat room put me onto this Instapundit, which is notoriously wingnut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopeless, no getting around it. You know, they wear that Moran T-shirt proudly. It is being reported that General McChrystal was a liberal. And about the fact that, Instapundit writing the following, quote, "The story about him voting for Obama is not contrived. He is a political liberal. He is a social liberal. He banned Fox News from the television sets in his headquarters." Yes, really. This puts to rest another false rumor that McChrystal deliberately precipitated his firing because he wants to run for president.
So, I will believe that.
Right.
Right about the time the year stops.
Well, no. He has broadly stated that he voted for Barack Obama for president.
Oh, yeah, I understand that, but I really doubt that he's a liberal.
But the thing that bugs me is, if you're a general, and if you are a good general, and the plan ain't working, well, if you're a good general, don't you then go to your commander in chief and say, "This ain't working, boss"?
Yep.
Now it could work because this is a fact, and I may catch a bunch of hell for this. This is a fact, Susan. That plan he had could work if you were willing to put 2.5 to 3 million American troops, which means reinstating a real quick draft,
exactly,
into the country and literally quarter troops in Afghan homes.
Now, of course, then you would have to put up with a revolution at home.
But then you've gone all in to use the Texas Hold'em phrase. You've gone all in with a deuce of clubs and a seven of diamonds. And that's how empires die.
Yep.
It would take everything we had to pull off something like that, and for no apparent purpose.
Yeah.
So what I don't understand is why he didn't just say, you know, this ain't working, you know.
Time to leave.
Let's try something else. Let's get serious about leaving.
Yeah.
I don't know. Business that came out from Barack Obama following the resignation / firing / sword falling on or whatever it was, that the command has changed but the mission has not. Well, the thing that bugged me about that, Susan, is I still don't know what the damn mission is.
Yeah,
and neither do any of us.
Well, okay, from what supposedly the mission is that counterinsurgency, which to me, from what I've been able to understand, is based on, France and America in Indochina. And I'll be blunt, we got our asses kicked. We stuck our hand in Indochina. We pulled back a bloody stump.
And that's what we do every time we go into somebody's place that isn't our place for reasons that are less than pure and less than proper.
So, what we need to do, what I'm sincerely praying, I realize that this is probably naive of me, but I'm praying that Obama understands that he could not can McChrystal at the same time change the mission. What I'm hoping he did was appoint Petraeus. As soon as he gets him in, then he's going to call him in and say, okay, here's the deal. We're getting out.
Well, they keep going on this July 2011 theory. And while I am made nervous by the weasel room that's in it, all you can hope at this point is that we're serious about it and that get out means get out, not get out and leave a few thousand troops there to start building the industrial infrastructure to mine all that lithium.
Yeah, that's what I'm praying for, too. But, you know, that's the only thing, because there is no way that we can go in and take over. It can't be done. The only way you can do that is if the Afghan people say, come in and do it, come in and do this for us, and they ain't gonna. They don't like outsiders.
Very few people who have been invaded like outsiders.
Well, you blame them. Now, if what you...
No, and by extension of that, the fact of the matter is, if somebody invaded us, hopefully there would be enough non-sheeple left to mount an insurgency.
Exactly. Now,
nobody likes to be invaded.
Exactly. Now, if
you've got Karzai out there now trying to, I was going to say, you've got Karzai out there trying to set up a separate peace with the Taliban and the Pakistani ISI and so forth. And he may be a total junkie by now. You know, when that story about how McChrystal couldn't rouse him out of sleeping off a bad cold.
Yeah, sleeping off his latest fix.
Yeah, there you go.
If you sincerely want to help the Afghan people, fine. Pull out and then say to the Afghan government, whatever it is, and don't quibble about whatever it is, say, you have bright people there. Send them to us so that they can go to school and learn sciences, engineering, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, or send them to school. We'll pay for it. Pick your country.
Yeah, but how are you going to get them back on the farm when they've seen the bright lights of the big city?
Well, now that's their problem.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The thing is, though, if by that way, we can send back people who are willing to build their own country. That's the only way you can drag that country out of the fourth century. Internally. You can't do it from without.
No. Well, you cannot impose so-called democracy at the muzzle of a gun.
Bayonet. Yeah. Can't be done. Just ask Batista.
Well, and some places on this earth are not conditioned to democracy or ideas of democracy. I'm not being hostile toward the Muslim world, but to the extent that democracy happens in Muslim countries, it's an uphill battle with one foot in a bucket because the Quran contains a political structure.
Yes, as well
as a religious structure. And the whole thing is predicated on hereditary. See what happens when I miss a night? The whole thing is predicated on an hereditary caliphate, which is a political structure. It's not a hereditary caliphate that is solely religious. The caliph is the last word on everything.
Exactly. Now, got a couple requests for the troops out there.
Okay.
The first one is, please, people, pick up the phone and call your representative. Not to your senator, your representative in the House. And what I need you to do is you ask for a bill of impeachment to be brought against
Martin Leach Cross Feldman.
Yes, Martin Feldman, U.S. District Court Judge for the Eastern District of Louisiana. Now, once you do that, or say if you've got one of those right-wing creepers for a representative, you can also call. There is a Democratic representative in Louisiana. Don't call the Republicans. I figure they're pretty much lost causes. There is one Democrat, however, and he's been pretty good about jumping all over VP. So he might be receptive to this. You can also call the Judiciary Committee and ask for this.
And, in fact, Jim actually did the legwork on that, and he sent me a note that I was going to bring up last night, had the lightning not interfered. Let me see if I can find it here. Yeah. Point of contact for House Judiciary Committee is Ms. Veronica Elegan, E-L-I-G-A-N, Veronica being V-E-R-O-N-I-C-A, Ms. Veronica Elegan, E-E-L-I-G-A-N, area code 202-225-5727.
Bob, if you'll shoot that to me, I'll amend it to the post on the judge who lifted moratorium tied to offshore drilling companies. And then people can just go to that post and find that contact information there.
Okay. Let me do that right now, right quick.
Now, there's one other thing. In the featured area on the main website, there is a new article, and you've talked a lot about cowering America. Well, somebody agrees with you.
Yeah.
There is a editorial written by Robert L. Borisage.
Bob Borisage, is a very good man. He heads up the Campaign for America's Future.
It's entitled, America Cowed, Are We Too Frightened to Forge Our Future? You can access it through the feature area on the main website. It will take you right to it.
Wow. I'm in good company. Like I said, I love it when that happens.
I recommend reading it. It is very thought-provoking, and it's unfortunately...
Well, Bob Borisage is a brilliant man, without a doubt.
Yes. Anyway, people, give a call to your representative and to the judiciary and to that... let me see. I will also put the contact information for that one... democratic House member.
Do please.
Let me give it to you just briefly here. The air. It's... where is he?
Well, go ahead and shoot me an email when you...
Charlie Melcana, Louisiana 3rd District.
Okay, okay. It would be interesting if the 3rd District of Louisiana falls within the jurisdiction of the Eastern District of Louisiana. I do not know, frankly.
Let's see. I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Well, the sort of dig around on that and shoot me a note with the guy's name, and, yeah, we'll get busy.
I'll put a link there to his his website, and people can find out where he. Oh yeah, his district is New Orleans.
Well, then I would suspect that's the Eastern District of Louisiana.
Yep.
All right. Well,
Melancon.
Melancon. Yeah, Melancon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's the one who called for BP to forego all of its bonuses and pour it into Gulf Relief.
Yeah, so impeaching this here judge probably wouldn't be too much of a stretch.
Yeah, that's I'm informed by David in Tennessee the 3rd Louisiana district is coastal, and yeah, Melancon is a good one. So that might be very much worthwhile. Susan,
no,
thanks a lot. And
office.
And folks can get the contact information off the post on the website, right?
Right. I'll get it up tonight.
All right. Great.
Thank you much, people. Give my love to Eggs.
Sure will. Take care, Susan. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan out there doing some of the legwork. And thanks very much to Jim as well for the contact info for the House Judiciary Committee. If you choose to act, if you choose to be activist about this, you can. There's nothing to stop you. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
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 Hi.
It's Brian.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Bob? I just want to say, yeah, I'm going to do that. I forgot to get to that. When I heard Susan's call the night before, or a couple of nights ago about this, impeaching this. He's certainly not the Marty Feldman that I love from Young Frankenstein.
No. Would that he were.
Feldman. Oh, I know. But he could cover cases in two different continents with his eyes going in
both directions. That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's right, in two different planets almost. But no, the fact is everything. Basically, even in this the corporate sellout media, everything about this judge it labels him a lightweight, and as far as an intellectual and judicial lightweight, and also, but except for this one journal and so-called news publication, you've heard of him, the Whore Street Journal. I mean, the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, right. The usual suspects.
Writer there, Dion Searcy, says the judge behind the ruling, and it opens up with, and I won't give you the whole article, I won't bore your audience there, but the federal judge who slapped down the Obama administration's moratorium on deep water drilling Tuesday has made a name for himself among the New Orleans legal community as a scholarly and conservative jurist.
See, they always hide behind that scholarly, Brian. When in fact they're just looking for big words to describe.
Yeah.
Big words to describe, you know, mean-spirited action.
Like that lying fascist SOB who was going to keep the tradition there named Judge Chief Justice John Roberts. And I didn't even know you could appoint somebody a justice of the Supreme Court for the first time, and at that same time appoint him as the head justice.
As the Chief Justice, right, yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me, but somehow it's... It was done, and under George W. Bush's regime, it's allowable. And also, I started on Roberbo's piece there. And also, if you want to go to the opednews.com, Brian O'Moore's piece there, I emailed it to you, Bob. But it's not going to be nearly as literate as Roberbo and all that. Did you manic depressive, borderline schizo like myself, ex former Marine? I want to get to that too about this McChrystal traitor to his own president. I want to get to that a little bit, but I just wrote an article. It's about Uncle. I disagree with Uncle Mike Malloy. It's a rarity for me, but it's about strategy. It's not about indifference of political opinion, really. But it's the article says it's titled. It's under the diaries for the non-professional writers there. This is not the time. It's titled. This is not the time to throw President Obama under the bus. And then the subtitle says, "Say it ain't so, Uncle Mike Malloy." And it just, do you want me to read an opening paragraph or so?
I've got it here.
Okay. Entirely leftist and entirely truly patriotic and for the American people, radio, internet, talk host Mike Malloy, or Uncle Mike Malloy, to the true progressives, when now faced with the continued loss of momentum, to paraphrase the president's own term for this other Mad Hatter's war in Afghanistan, during the occasion of his rightful firing of General McChrystal of the Obama administration, has been defiantly doing a clarion call of late that we should all just let the rightist Republicans and Tea Partiers take back the entire Congress this November. And this be sheer insanity on Mike Malloy's part there. I know my writing needs editing more than, and I did edit it down. I'm still too wordy. My mind is still going way too fast for,
Well, you know, whether you're writing with a quill pen or typing on a keyboard, the brain fires faster than the hands, Brian, and there's no getting around that.
Yeah. But it just disagree with. I just do not think we should give 1 ounce of power back to these fascists, because I think if we did that in November 2010, they would do the same thing that they did in November 1995 onwards to President Clinton with their phony impeachment. They held him under the gun for the rest of the until November 2001 when he let in the twice unelected king wannabe, or he was a king for 8 years under the misery of that George W. Bush. And I go on about Bill Clinton's and his budget surpluses, and where not a penny of Social Security surpluses were touched for the last 3 years of Clinton's administration. It's like caller Sandra's alluding to, where that Pete Peterson and the rest of those bastards there are on the committee. They want to privatize, i.e. they want to steal the rest of Social Security surpluses. That's the American workers, i.e. the true American citizens' retirement, security and monies there, that they want to privatize. That's disgusting. But the fact is, if we let them have back to Congress these fascists who ostensibly call themselves Republicans or Tea Partiers or Libertarians, and DLC, some Blue Dog Democrats too, they got to go too in November. But if we let them back in, even to that kind of power, they're going to just have Obama right back where they had Bill Clinton in 1995 onwards, January 95 onwards, where he had to triangulate on all the Republicans' issues. And it just, that's not, you can't do that. He's just starting to clean up a horrible mess under George W. Bush. I mentioned that he took $3.1 trillion or more of the Social Security annual surpluses Bush Jr. did. And Al Gore, the duly elected man in 2000, had the Social Security lockbox all lined up. We had budget surpluses in 98, 99, and 2000 for all the foreseeable future. And Bush Jr. comes in there and steals. They bully it with the impeachable, more impeachable judges there, the five Supreme Court judges there, Bush v. Gore, Florida 2000, Bob, where the impeachable decision there to stop the vote count, the people's vote in Florida, against all the states' rights and all the constitutional rights of voters in this country there. And it's also impeachable because it was an unsigned, and not to have any further value or precedent in any future rulings decision. It was completely unsigned, the 5-4 Bush v. Gore decision in December 12, 2000 that stopped the vote count in Florida. These rightist bastards can't be allowed to have an ounce of power back. They can't be allowed to take the midterm elections and take back the two houses of Congress. Or this country that the Republic may well be, it's on its death, it's in a morbid state right now thanks to 8 years of G.W. Bush, which nearly finished it off. But if we give them back to Congress and just give up, that's why I know Mike Malloy, Uncle Mike gets disgusted that the Sicilian temperament and he's got Irish temperament on top of that with Uncle Mike, and I can see where that's a volatile combination there. And he gets angry about, but he's a principled, true progressive. I understand his anger. I feel the same anger at too many of these corporatist Democrats as well. But believe me, as bad as she is, even on foreign policy, where I disagree with her, somebody like Hillary Clinton on the health care debate during those past months with those teabaggers bringing their guns to the presidential rallies and bringing their guns to the health care reform rallies, talking about something where it's talking about allegedly healing human beings, but they have to have the right to carry firearms, which are deadly weapons, to these health care conferences.
Right, and especially to the extent that they're handguns, Brian.
Yeah.
You know, you bring your double-barreled shotgun, you know, maybe you can say, well, you know, I use this thing for varmints, and I go pheasant hunting once in a while, and blah, 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 blah. But when you bring handguns, a handgun is good for only one thing, and we all know it, and that is killing other human beings.
And not to kill a deer for venison or not to... That's right. Absolutely not, yeah. But Hillary Clinton would have... She would have, as much as she's too corporatist, that Barack Obama, he's shown himself to be often too corporatist for me, but it's way too early to Clintonize this president. We can't allow this to happen. We're too deep into the fascism already. We are a corporatist fascist state right now, but we still have a chance to get out of it if we keep this president in power and give him...
And see, that's the thing. I know, I think I have a...
Horrors.
I think I have a sense, Brian, for where Mike is coming from on this. Although I would not dare to speak for him, because speculate. But if where he's coming from, is where I think he's coming from, it's that question that we were discussing a few nights ago here about the fact that the American people never move toward anything in the way of meaningful change. Until such time as
depression hits,
as they bottom out. It's the same thing with a drunk or a drug addict you got to bottom out. And when Mike talks about letting the bastards just have it, then you know that's. But you would think, and this is the contrary position. You would think that after 8 years of the rotten bastards having the bit in their teeth with Bush in the White House, they controlled the House of Representatives for 12 years. They had control of the Senate. They have obvious control of the Supreme Court of the United States. You would think they could drive us to that bottom out period. And that's why I said, Brian, wait just a minute, please, because this is important. That is why I beat the drum so damned hard. From 2004 to 2008, saying the Republicans never mind all the sleazy, miserable the set piece theater that they did during the 2008 campaign, Brian. The right wing did not want, the GOP did not want the White House in 2008. Because they had broken it almost beyond repair, and they were at a point where can you imagine the economy bottoming out on John McCain's watch and Godzilla from Wasilla in the vice presidential office? If they had done that, they would have been in a Hoover situation. And I will credit the GOP with enough sense to recognize that they did not want to be in that Hoover situation, because they would have let the entire country go to hell, and that would have put the Republican Party truly in the wilderness for a generation, just like Hoover did.
Yeah, but you and I both know that as thinking Americans, as basically reasoning Americans, they can still come from all parties, but they seem to be completely absent from the Republicans or the Tea Partiers or the media. But we know we've already bottomed out under the disaster of 8 years of this twice not elected man, George W. Bush, and the regime that he ran along with Dick Torture Cheney, and that's McChrystal and the killing teams that he had out there. And I agree with you talking about the Ray McGovern wrote a great piece at the Wednesday, June 23rd, commondreams.org. You know, that they're saying that they're trying to dismiss National Security Advisor to Obama, James L. Jones, as a clown, quote-unquote. They really just were. They're setting that up, too, to get him fired so he can play the victim, when this is the guy that wanted more than 100,000 troops there. He basically goaded Obama into a bigger escalation than Obama himself wanted during the 2008 campaign in Afghanistan. McChrystal's insistence last year that Obama boost troop levels in Afghanistan to about 100,000 is what's driving this policy, and that's what Ray McGovern's speaking about. And also this James L. Jones, he's hardly a clown. He's a former commandant of the Marine Corps. I'm a former Marine, and you have to have a pristine record. You have to have almost the Marine Corps equivalent of a Dwight Eisenhower, a General Eisenhower, and that's something this McChrystal doesn't have, the so-called combat veteran who was... I think he was hit in the chest by friendly fire, or he shot himself or something in a training maneuver, but he hasn't really been in combat. He left... the military academy or became an officer in the mid to late 70s, you know, post-Vietnam, and he wasn't really, and he served in occupied Iraq as a general, which is, you know, not on the front lines, not on the original battles there, the 4th Division coming in later, then the other coming up from Kuwait and all that, the actual invasion and firefights to take Iraq. He was not on anything involved and even close to the front-line troops there. He's more of a, well, he's a political sycophant and hack to the Bush administration. That's
well, and let's go back to James Jones for a minute.
Okay.
Because, and this is another one of those moments, and this is also why I said the Rolling Stone article gave me a sense of conflicting, of a conflict. It created for me, in my mind, a conflicting opinion.
Okay.
And that is this. He called James Jones a clown. And the fact of the matter is, it was one of those situations because James Jones had been his immediate superior to one extent or another, even though one's Army and one's Marine Corps. There was some sort of superior-inferior relationship there. And then, of course, McChrystal went upward, and Jones went laterally in terms of retirement. All right, so just stay with that. Stay with that for a minute.
With much of the, because Jones disagreed with much of the Bush policy towards both Iraq and Afghanistan, I believe.
Right. So just stay there for a minute, and remember historically that the one thing that George Marshall understood best going into the Second World War was that he had two egomaniacal martinets with what did Jim call it the other night? A lot of fruit salad on their chest.
Right.
In the form of Dwight Eisenhower and Douglas MacArthur.
Yeah.
Douglas MacArthur had had as his aide de camp Dwight Eisenhower earlier during his administration of the Philippines, if you'll recall.
That's right. That's right.
And the two despised each other. Dwight Eisenhower at one point said, "The one class I always wanted to take in my studies was theater, and luckily for me, I got to work with General Eisenhower, and he was the best theater professor I could ever have had."
That's right. You mean MacArthur, right?
MacArthur. Yeah, MacArthur.
Right. Yeah.
And MacArthur, in turn, said that Eisenhower was the best file clerk he had ever had.
Yeah, they wouldn't say that. They said that about somebody named Harry Truman, too, who served during World War One and all that, too. The really great administrators Eisenhower would become, and maybe the best of them all, George Marshall, and Harry Truman during World War One and beyond, and going after the war profiteers in World War Two. They would. This McChrystal is nothing compared to them, and the way he's administered or watched over this Afghanistan occupation, where we're now paying off Taliban and we're protecting opium lords in effect in Afghanistan, as that's the only way to keep the peace.
Let's back up and finish for a second.
Okay.
So when World War II broke out, the obvious and utterly necessary thing was to make sure that MacArthur and Eisenhower were nowhere near each other.
Right.
And that neither could have a hand in the other's doings, because we have an American history that tells us what happens when that happens. About 6-8 miles up the road from me, the two Confederate armies, under one under General Wise and the other under, they were both former governors of Virginia, and those two would have rather fought each other than fight the Yankees. The egos that come into play are profound. So with that in mind, let's look at the Jones-McChrystal situation, and let me add this to the quantum of knowledge about General Jones.
Right.
He left the Marine Corps, left the military, and went into business as a consultant. You know, they always do.
Yeah.
They're drawing that really, really nice military retirement. They're still relatively young men. And they get on the board of this or the directorship of that, and they start, and they basically they double their salary. So what did I, because I remember this very clearly. Jim Jones, what he did is he got on a board or a consultancy where he spent most of his time. I kid you not, because I had one of those little on-air aneurysms when I read it. He spent most of his time before he was tapped by President Obama advocating that we keep blowing up Appalachia and that we take the coal out of Appalachia and we mix and that we then use 6 gallons of clean water to produce 1 gallon of liquid coal fuel on which he wanted to run the Air Force's aircraft.
Okay, well, if he signed on to that, no, then he's lost me as a... I don't know too much about the man. I know from the novelist James Jones that attracted me to the name, you know, as
right.
He came running and from here to eternity. And it's probably, it really is my favorite Frank Sinatra movie there. It is Some Came Running there based in Indiana there, the story. But it's just the fact that he was a commandant of the Marine Corps. He had to be a damn good Marine. But that you can take too much of that Marine or military mentality. It could come from any military in the world. I'm looking at another story there. This Israeli flotilla attack there. It's still resonating. You're talking about the secular world there in Islam, where the only democracy there, basically where they built it themselves, is the Republic of Turkey. But this action by Israel has made the Turks more and more onerous and less feeling friendly or allied as an ally towards the Israelis and others. They do not want to rebuild the Ottoman Empire like any of this.
Well, did you happen to notice, Brian, that the Turks got to feeling a little froggy last week?
Yeah.
And they went in and bombed the snot out of northern Iraq?
Well, the Kurds and the Turks are less friendly now than the Greeks and the Turks are over Cyprus, and so you know that's they're almost in a that's going to happen, but I don't agree with everything there either, that the Republic of Turkey, like Israel, where we have to people can't even give civilian aid to places like the Gaza Strip, and because it could be funneled to Hamas. That's supposed to be a terrorist organization, enemy of America. No Hamas member has ever attacked an American target or American cities in America. And the PKK, the Kurdish military, the only democratic part of Saddam's Iraq or post Gulf War I Iraq, there was the northern Kurdish part of it. It's socialistic, and there's also, they favor too many Islamic extremists too. That's where that, the guy they killed in 2006 there, the Al-Qaeda in Iraq leader there, and they got him, that's where he was hanging out there just before the Gulf War, and the Bush administration could have gotten him. He was a terrorist. He was out of the zone that was under control of Saddam Hussein. They could have killed him, but they wanted to leave him there as a pretext for, as a good reason for war after they got into the blood and guts of the actual Iraq occupation and invasion. They could say, well, they got this guy. This is a terrorist. He's up in the Kurdish section there. But they'll try to say, they the disinformation, you know, these corporatists lying rightist on the major news media, they'll just say that Saddam Hussein knew this guy was there, but there was an area not under his control in Kurdish northern Iraq, but that they do have a more of a democratic tradition there too. It's not helped, of course, by the bellicosity. The Kurdish minority in southern Turkey is they're always restive, but the Turks need to give them much more language rights and cultural rights than they do. It's wrong, and Turkey needs to admit that the Armenian genocide did happen. It's just that even Kemal Atatürk, who was the founder of modern Turkey, Bob, some Armenian Americans might disagree with me on this. I understand their anger, like Jewish Americans talking about Nazi Germany. It's hard to be calm about that. These subjects were an Armenian talking about the Armenian genocide during World War I. But Kemal Atatürk, when some of his lieutenants were killing off Armenians when they were supposed to be fighting off the Russians there in the Turkey just after World War I, that was trying to hold its borders together there, and the nationalists finally came to power under Kemal Atatürk, when they started killing off innocent Armenian civilians, he had 8 of those Turkish officers shot immediately. Kemal Atatürk. I know that's how they do things in the Middle East. That's part of it. But the fact is, he was not a friend of the Armenian people there. But at the same time, he was not the one that did the Armenian genocide. That was Enver Pasha. That was an earlier Islamic nutcase with the Turkic versus Armenian thing thrown in there. The Armenians were a a hard-working Christian minority in the dying Ottoman Empire then, you know, a largely Muslim population there. So you single them out like in Germany, God love them, with the Jews there. But right and wrong is got to be held to in foreign policy. We're not doing that with the Turks and the Kurds. We're not doing that with the Israelis and the Palestinians in Gaza. We have to have some standing there. I think this president could be much more. He could be pushed into doing that if you could get out these guys like McChrystal that he's joking about, saying that they think Obama's afraid of.
But you see, Brian, I don't know. You know, I think it is. My personal opinion is that it is systemic with our military system. I think it's a problem that we have. I think it's a problem that we have in the way we raise up our officer corps. And the way that we, and you know, look, it's a case of, somebody took it to heart, and we run the military like a business now. And that means that the only way you advance is by kissing sufficient rear ends, until you get to the point where you can drop trow and expect the rest of the structure to kiss yours. Hey, Brian, I gotta roll along, but a good call, my friend.
Good night.
Take care. Brian, calling from New Hampshire, and we roll onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey. So, what happened to you yesterday?
Just got taken out by an ugly thunderstorm.
Oh, God. Oh, well. Yeah, I know those things happen.
Well, you find out these things at the worst possible moment, but it turns out we've got a bank of uninterruptible power supplies here to protect all the equipment and everything, and they're all supposed to have battery backup in them. Well, one of them, one of the older ones, has gone on to its long home. And, you know, just welcome to my world.
Well, anyway, so it looks like there's no end in sight for the Congress to come up with a plan to extend the unemployment benefits.
Right, there's more of an end in sight for Afghanistan than there is for working people who are broke and crippled on the sidelines.
Well, 1.6 million by the end of the month. You know, I keep thinking that number keeps rolling around in my head because, to the point where I'm almost obsessed. I'm just sort of like, what is going on? I mean, what do they think is going to happen? You see what I'm saying? I'm trying to understand this disconnect. Somehow. But people are just going to get on with it somehow. You know, I'm just, and I hate to keep harping on it, but I'm just in total disbelief.
It's at a point now where Senator, I don't know if you saw this, but Senator Debbie Stabenow took to the floor of the Senate calling for emails and phone calls and the outrage of the people, saying, you know, the Republicans want this economy to fail. And saying plainly, the unemployed in this country need our help. I have to give credit where credit is due, Sandra.
Oh, okay.
And you know, she was at least raising a ruckus, and I guess she had a conference call today, in which she literally begged the blogging community, the liberal community, to get people to absolutely flood their senators' offices about the jobs bill that the Repiglicans are filibustering now.
Well, I mean, you know, once again, though, I'm just sort of, you shouldn't have to be begging. I'm just, you know, what is this? So,
well, it goes back to the fact that we have allowed, or Harry Reid has allowed, really, the Senate. The Senate rules to be rewritten informally, I suppose, to require require 60 votes for any passage of anything.
Right, but that's a recent development, though, and it's not. You know,
and it's wholly it's entirely BS.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm just stunned that their fake adherence to that is, you know, causing so much misery for people. It's just unbelievable because I'm serious. These people won't have any income. I mean, am I tripping?
No, and it's like a few hundred thousand now, and in a couple of weeks it goes to something on the order of 1.6 million.
Right, 1.6 million, and this is no income. you know, on an average of $300 a week, you know, and that's average. So I know I've been on unemployment before, and, you know, it varies. It can be from...
Oh, I have too.
On up, but...
Pulling down $300 a week is, I mean, you know, if you average, you know, $1,200 a month, maybe.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, when you're pulling that down and you're doing mortgage, car payment, and groceries and utilities, you know, it won't get it done.
No, it won't. But it's just stunning. And this idea of suggesting that these people get drug tested too is
Orrin Hatch just. I don't want to say anything inflammatory, but something biblical needs to happen to Orrin Hatch. The nerve of saying something like that, because among other things, it's, God, I even hate myself. It's fiscally stupid. And when they called him on it, said, well, you know, where are you going to pay for the drug test? Well, he says we're going to pay for the drug tests out of the money we save by not paying people unemployment. And if there's anything left over, we'll put it to pay down the deficit.
Yeah, no, I read all that, and I was just sort of, you know, feeling sick. And, you know, logistically, it's just ridiculous proposition anyway.
But the thing that must be borne in mind, Sandra, unless, you know, I'm completely off the rails on this. This is not right-wing extremism. This is right-wing par for the course. The right-wing, by definition, is extremist, but there's nothing new or nothing shocking in this. If you go, here she is, that crazy, crazy, just, you know, running around naked in the yard woman, Sharon Angle from Nevada.
Yeah.
She laid it out on the line. She was interviewed by somebody, a local Nevada journalist, and she said, you can make more money on unemployment than you can going down and getting one of those jobs that's an honest job but doesn't pay as much. And so that's what's happened to us, is that we have put in so much entitlement into our government that we really have spoiled our citizenry and said, you don't want the jobs that are available. And that just makes me nuts, you know, because there's a two word question that follows that answer. What jobs?
Oh no! And also, these people seem to be operating as if we don't have 10%+ unemployment. You know, on the record and off the record, we know it's 20%, and depending on what class you're in, it may be 30, 40, 50, and what color, maybe 70%. Let's be honest.
Sure. And hence, what jobs?
And so we're talking about massive amount of underemployment and unemployed, just millions of people. And, yeah, I suppose the government or the country with that many people unemployed and underemployed will limp along. But now they're trying to not provide the state aid, too. I mean, the whole bill is at risk, and... If the Democrats are so stupid that they can't see the political cost of this, you know, well, I'm just, I am at a loss, because politically speaking, they ought to have enough sense to know that this shit can come back and bite them in a big way.
Sure, but the thing is, and this is the ultimate failing, I think, Sandra, they are operating from a position of fear. And when you operate out of fear, you are doomed to failure. And frankly, doomed to disaster.
Yeah, but every poll out is slamming Obama and company for not doing enough on jobs. You know, ain't nobody freaking out about deficit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not. That's some sort of beltway fantasy and rich fuckers who don't want to pay taxes. That's what that's about. And, you know, the majority of people, know their bread and butter issues. You know, I mean, besides the 20% people who really don't know a thing, but I don't know. I'm just sort of.
But remember, those 20%ers show up at rallies. You know, I mentioned the other night that little grassroots the thing that was supposed to take place this Saturday in Beckley about, you know, our deficit, our budget, our future.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that thing was pretty much on the square. Well, I got an email today saying, well, we're not having it because only two people have signed up for it. which means that the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters were not involved. Because if that had been a Freedom Vex event, there would have been 1,000 people. The walls of the room would have been bulging, and the teabaggers would have shown up with signs that say, quoting the Constitution, as saying neither a borrower nor a lender be.
Yeah. No. I mean, yeah, you're right. But I noticed that Brian was sort of taking Malloy to task about the, you know, oh, to hell with it, let the Republicans have the whole thing. And, you know, I agree that's kind of harsh, but, you know, I have to ask, well, I'm not seeing a whole big difference, sorry. And I know there is, but I don't know what these people in power are doing.
I don't either.
And it's just sort of like when you talk about, oh, no, we don't want to get them back in, well, I'm looking at what's here now, and, you know, they're not taking care of what is really meaningful for people, which is job creation.
That is the absolute truth. And again, I understand the place that Mike is coming from on it, and I don't wholeheartedly disagree. Because we've got Democrats that are in there now that, as you note, aren't being Democrats.
No. And, you know,
And maybe the response to that is if I am correct about the GOP not having wanted the White House in the first place, and that's why they put up old Grumpy McCain, then, you know, maybe this plays back into their hands. But the thing is, the people that they're, you know, they're not playing with the rich people's lives. They're playing with your life and mine.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, and the thing is, you know, you look at what's going on with this reform, the financial reform. I mean, that's turning into a big joke because you have the likes of Franks trying to end the White House undermining the whole derivative spinoff, which is, you know, ultimately one of the more important aspects of this. Of course, you know, your average Joe may not be interested in what the derivatives mean, but like I explained to you, $700 trillion. You know that number. I mean, it's a huge problem.
Yeah.
And it needs to be separated. I don't want my banks dabbling in that shit. I like a nice banking system like Canada has, which, by the way, barely rippled when the shit went down.
Interestingly, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of, this is important stuff that's going on. And, you know, day by day, the oligarchs are stopping it in its tracks because they've been allowed to reconstitute themselves there as they were before 2008, and we're left to swing. Because, see, what I think is happening is that this country is setting itself up to allow for double-digit unemployment as permanent as these wars without end, Bob, mark my words.
Yeah, the creation of a fellaheen class or a helot class, for lack of better terms.
Which, you know, which to me is that definitely marks the end of this sort of democracy, because you cannot have this kind of democracy without just a ginormous, you know, as my nieces say, middle class. Okay.
Yeah.
That has to be huge. Because we have to bear the brunt of this kind of Anglo-American capitalism, and the only way we're able to do it is to have this huge middle class. Now, with that slipping away daily, you're faced with this, I'm serious, neo-feudalism, where you're dealing with debt and deflation is like your enemy. It makes your debts bigger, you never get out from under. So I know I always turn this into an econ discussion.
No. But the thing, you cannot separate it. This is what it is. And the only thing that I would offer in addition to what you just said, Sandra, is the fact that this isn't retrograde motion in its pure sense. This is not the kind of thing where, well, you know, we're going to go backwards and the middle class is going to contract. And it's going to be like before the middle class arose, you know, because, you know, you can pin the rise of the middle class to the passage of the National Labor Relations Act.
Oh, yeah, no.
And what was there before that, before Social Security and the National Labor Relations Act, you had grinding poverty among the elderly, and you had, but the other thing you had
was a large, a very agrarian percentage of the populace who were not business farmers, but were subsistence farmers.
Right. But
and when I say it's not going to be retrograde motion, what I mean is to say we're not going back to that because there's no land to go back to.
No, no, that's the thing. No, you don't even have that base available. That's why I mean neo-feudalism. You need to look more towards the enclosure. That's the period I'm looking at.
Yeah.
You know, because all the resources will be out of the hands of the masses, you know? Like when they enclosed in 1500, I mean, that just sent people reeling, you know? Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I'm so sick of looking at it. It's just like, wow.
What drives you nuts is when you look at it and you see it, and Sandra, they've got, you know, the people in the Obama administration, they've got to see this too, don't they? Well, doesn't Harry Reid have staff that sees this? Doesn't Nancy Pelosi have staff that sees this?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There must be a calculus somewhere or some idea that they can manage this grotesque underclass that's being created. And to me, I'm at a loss as to how you manage it when the power of the state is weakened by virtue of the Second Amendment. You see what I'm saying by that? We're not like other industrial nations where the force of the state is just monopolized by them. We do have access to weapons. You see what I'm saying? So it's a really nasty mixture going on here.
It's an absolute the toxic stew.
But
as far as the well-being of this nation is concerned.
Yeah, that's all I'm.
And frankly, going forward, and this comes back to, you know, you apologized a minute ago. I'll apologize too. I apologize for always trying to turn this back around to the fact that we don't make nothing no more. And until we get to the point where we start making stuff again, those jobs for an unlanded unemployed are not going to be there. You know, as long as we're living in a world in which, you know, 10,000 people show up for 200 minimum wage Walmart jobs, we're not going to make any progress. And you can't call it that. You know, in my book, I think we ought to, it would never happen, but we ought not be allowed to say we're creating jobs when the jobs that are so-called being created are jobs that pay less than would ordinarily be expectable in an industrialized society. And I think maybe that's the bottom of the bottom line. This is This is a deindustrialized society.
Well, and also, you know, the U.S. has had a canny knack for having valve releases. You know, during Jackson's time, you had the land. You know, you just send these people out west. You know, that relieved the valve. You know, after slavery, you had Jim Crow, and then now you have the prison system to take care of excess labor. I'm not too sure what they're going to do this time. So, you know, as a student of history, I'm very curious to see where the valve release is on this one. Because this is a MF-er coming up here. Because there's a lot of people who aren't able to participate, and I'm wondering where they're supposed to go. And I didn't mean to be flippant about the Jim Crow stuff, but you understand.
No, you're not. That wasn't flippant.
It's just excess, how U.S. has managed the lesser people, to quote Alan Simpson.
Yeah, and the small people, to quote that other fellow. And what you're talking about in terms of a metaphor for all of this, and in a way there's a certain apropos comparison between the two. On the one hand, the middle class is the infrastructure of a functioning so-called free society. Just like the great wilderness spaces like the Amazon and so forth create the carbon sinks for a world that can support humans. You know, we've got various natural processes that cleanse the air and the water, and from which all creatures great and small arise. Well, that's what the middle class does on an economic basis. And we're torched, you know, and frankly, the great rainforests are being torched, and so is the middle class.
Yeah, and it's throughout the industrial countries of the world. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm focusing in on the U.S. because it's the largest where there's some semblance of freedom. I mean, I've spoken about the Indian situation. That's a democracy, but, you know, that's pretty damn scary. That's not the kind of democracy I want to live in.
No, because but, you know, the funny thing is, Sandra, the Indian democracy is probably far more close to a pure form than anything that we can imagine here. Because, well, hell's bells. Democracy as envisioned by the Athenians was a political structure that was that presupposed a vast, truly vast substructure of free labor and poor slaves.
Right. Yeah. Well. Then. Yeah. I mean, democracy is a four, you know, is a four letter word in some usage, obviously. You know, but I don't. You know, and that's why I wonder what's going on with the politicians, because Republican or Democratic, you still have to have a vibrant and useful middle class, or, you know, you can't have just rich and poor. That's not going to work, you know, unless you're going to have a Mad Max. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out.
No, I know, and even to go back to that historical lesson, even the Athenian democracy, while it did have that vast substructure of slave labor, it had a very carefully manipulated wealth structure so that the wealthiest of the wealthy were only marginally richer than the so-called middle class that arose, and they manifested their wealth by the parties that they threw. And that's a simplistic rendering of it, but it's an accurate one. And we have gone far, far beyond that. We have enshrined wealth as the motivating principle behind this grand experiment, if you will. Make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
You know, this is a political structure that enshrines wealth as the whole raison d'être of why we are who we are.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just in awe of the sort of degradation that's going on at every level. I mean, this sort of gushing oil that's just continuing, and, you know, I can see it slowly being pushed off the, you know, the information grid, but it's not resolved. Just like Katrina was pushed off the grid, and that was never resolved. And I don't know if it can be, because it's, you know, what I hear today, big oil we're washing up on Pensacola now.
Yep.
So it definitely seems to keep rearing its head, but I'm not really happy with hearing about how it's being managed down there with the sort of security and, you know, all that sort of business. It's too much. Anyway.
But and that's the thing, that's a very freighted anyway, Sandra.
No, I was just thought I don't even have any sports to talk about.
Well, you know, we kind of missed being able to celebrate yesterday with the U.S. moving on, but I can say this much: I'm proud of the Japanese team. They beat the Danes today.
Oh, that's right! I saw the headline. That was a good one.
You know, who had like a 12-inch reach advantage and a solid 1-foot height advantage, and still beat them. So they're, you know, they've moved on into the elimination round, the round of 16.
And who are we playing next?
We are playing Ghana.
Oh, Ghana, that's right. I saw that and I thought, oh shoot, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, because we actually wound up winning Group C with England coming in second, which was, you know, earth shattering to begin with.
No, the headline's over there, and I have a friend who sent me an email talking about, damn, she had some other plans, but now she has to watch the game on Saturday or something because they're so upset about how England's played so far.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's sackcloth and ashes on the time in England, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's like, you know, she said it's so miserable there with the whole Tory in power and this. It's just misery.
and it was important for us to actually win the group because even if we lose to Ghana, England won the real booby prize because they get Germany.
Well, yeah, and Germany got beat once, didn't they? I was surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, the Serbs took down the Germans.
That's right. I knew it was something real crazy and, you know, quite apropos if you want to get all nationalistic about it. I thought that was hilarious. But listen, I got to ask you something though. What about how do you see that McChrystal stuff playing out? That was a bit.
Well, you know, I don't. On the one hand, the right wing wants him to go on the hustings, and now that he's free of so-called, you know, Obama's political correctness, to go out and just really lambast the Obama administration and talk about how we just need to let the dogs loose and let the army do what the army does best in Afghanistan and go kill people and blow stuff up. I don't see that happening. You know, maybe it will. I mean, the American Enterprise Institute has a bunch of money, and so does the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute and all of those right-wing think tanks. But honest to God, I've come to the conclusion, and like I said at the top of the program, it was gratifying to see that John Amato over at Crooks and Liars had reached the same conclusion, and that is that General McChrystal wanted the hell out. That Rolling Stone interview was the literary or PR equivalent of unloading your M16 into your big toe.
Well, no, I mean, and too true, because 7 months ago the fool should have been fired, if truth be told. If Obama was talking about the continuity of civilian control, well, what happened to it 7 months ago, Bob? When that fool was making speeches about, I need this and I need that right now. Right now. He should have been fired then, right?
You would think, yes.
Well, I mean, I don't really know. Another little snippet that I thought was interesting, bit of reporting that slipped out or was leaked out, was that Gates, you know, supported him.
Oh, Gates was in there.
Shot down by Obama or whatever.
But again, I come back. How much of this is theater, Sandra?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean about it leaked or it was put out there, and you know, the fact that they got so.
Yeah, it's good cop, bad cop, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and also the policy is still in place, though. Let's not be that's the substantive.
Right, and let's remember, this was not a resignation from the military.
No.
This was loss of command.
Yeah.
So Gates kind of had to go out there and, you know, well, son, you know, I did all I could for you. I tried really hard, but, well, you know, President Obama's a hard-headed man when he gets an idea, and he's, you know, the speech.
No. The speech should be, why are you still there, Bob Gates? You know what I mean?
I know. But
oh, God.
But who's out there that would be satisfied? Because that again, is one of those systemic institutional problems inherent in our structure right now. Nobody's going to come into that job who's not coming from the place that the problem comes from, too.
Well, no, this is a function of the permanent war state, too. You know, I mean, I said this when he didn't replace them when he came into power. It's like, oh shit, the national security state is it?
Yeah, and going full, you know, it's going full steam ahead at that.
Yeah, well, anyway, I don't know. I don't understand why what Obama is doing over in Afghanistan, you know, it just seems so hideously pointless. But anyway, listen, I'll let you move along.
Well, Sandra, it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye now. Sandra calling from California, and, you know, she apologizes for saying, for turning everything toward economics, but sooner or later, there are, well, in a complicated, complex state, to quote Tom Robbins, the author, everything is part of it. And what happens to this country when the Republicans get their way and kill any attempt, as they have done,
to give relief to the unemployed, you know, breaking from the Associated Press an hour ago, headline, Republicans kill Senate jobless aid measure. Republicans in the Senate have defeated an election year bill to continue weekly jobless benefits for millions of long-term unemployed workers. The 57-41 loss, see, was a major blow for President Obama and Democrats. They needed three more votes for a total of 60. To stop, understand, this was not the, all we want is an up or down vote. Where the hell are Democrats in that argument? Don't we have one senator who can get in front of a TV camera and say, all we want is an up or down vote? God almighty, all I can remember for the years that the Republicans had the Senate is every time we even slowed anything down, Bill the Cat Killer Frist came out and said, all we want is an up or down vote. Well, you know, maybe a few million unemployed people would like an up or down vote, too. Because this was not a vote on the merits of the bill. This was a vote on whether or not we could get 60 votes to pass it. Because the Republicans, the godforsaken minority in this situation, the Republicans have declared that it takes 60 votes to pass so much. Remember that old ABC, I'm only a bill on Capitol Hill? And the lonely little bill sitting on the steps goes to the House and gets passed so they can have a stop sign at the corner of Oak and Main. And then it goes to the Senate and it gets passed and then the president signs the bill and the bill becomes a law and there's going to be a stop sign at the corner of Oak and Main. We cannot even get a stop sign at the corner of Oak and Main under the broken system that the Republican Party has deliberately put in place as an overpowering minority in the Senate. And why is it being done? Why is it being done? For one reason, politics. Because on the one hand, the Republicans and their vast legion of strategists have told them, listen, just stop anything they want to do, and it'll keep falling apart, and then you blame them for having it fall apart. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party, with its little straggling band of strategists, are saying, well, if they stop us, we'll blame them. Here's the hint. It's going to work for the Republicans and not for the Democrats. Because among other things, and I'm going right back to the phone, but I want to sort of flesh this out. It won't work for the Democrats because the Democrats have people like Blanche Lincoln. Now, bear in mind, this is from Rupert Murdoch's paper, the Wall Street Journal. And it is dated yesterday, so it's nice and fresh. Senator Blanche Lincoln, one of the chief architects of the financial regulation overhaul nearing completion in Congress, is pushing for a change in the legislation that would benefit a bank in her home state of Arkansas. Arvest Bank Group, Inc., would be excused from provision in the law that could require banks to raise more capital. It would require, in Arvest's case, about $115 million. The plan was to exempt only banks with less than $10 billion in capital from this provision of the law. She wants to raise that ceiling, Senator Lincoln does, the so-called Democrat, to $15 billion, so that Arvest will get exempted, too. Why? Why would one senator run the risk of fouling an entire piece of legislation for one bank? Why? The answer is easy. Arvest Bank Group, Incorporated is headquartered in, come on, this is easy, Bentonville, Arkansas. The predominant ownership of Arvest Bank Group, Inc.
are the heirs of Sam Walton. In other words, Arvest Bank is Walmart's bank, and Blanche Lincoln is Walmart's senator. And that's why any strategy for blaming the Repiglicans for the working-class people being screwed out of unemployment is doomed to failure. And both sides, damn them, are playing politics with human lives. And you know, I told you the pressure that we're under here, the stressors that are on us here, over something prosaic as a damned waste disposal system. And you have responded so generously, so kindly, and so decently, and I've been able to get the ball rolling. But in a way, I feel bad. Because I know what's happening to me is happening to, and my family here, is happening to millions of Americans. And it's only because I have whatever ability to get behind this mic and do what I do that you know of what is going on here. But there are millions of voiceless Americans who do not have the ear of Senator Blanche Lincoln, D. Walmart, and have just been told by a vote of 57-41 to go chini themselves. There's no doubt whose fault this is. There is no doubt whatsoever. And this is not the blame game and blaming people, such as the Repiglicans like to whine about. This is merely a matter of assigning liability, which is, well, the very heart and soul of our ability to determine fault, because fault matters. Remember, one of the oldest principles of our system of justice and jurisprudence is the simple idea that all liability is based upon fault. And absent the means of determining fault, in this case, the fault of the Repiglican Party, we become a society unable to find out what is even happening to us or why, when the answer is practically carved in stone before our very eyes. 3 minutes before the hour, and it's time to take a break. We will do that. Coming up, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. If you're on hold, please stay with me. If you're not, and you got something to say, you've got an hour to get it said in. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
You're a rich girl.
This is for you, Blanche Lincoln.
Because you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far. Because you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
Don't you know? Don't you know? The value's wrong. Oh. So take what is given you. It's Thursday, June 24, 2010.
The cap comes off, but is now back on.
The seawater started coming up, and the crew did absolutely the right thing.
The moratorium is off, but may soon be back on.
The moratorium in place might be refined.
Plus, an Asian invasion. Asian carp, that is.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The fact that Salazar is sticking with this and that they're going to appeal and they're going to hang in there on this, I think is a measure of how much this administration is in hock to its ecological left.
Yes, that's right, Charles Krauthammer. That's why Barack Obama has supported more offshore drilling, more nuclear power, and imaginary clean coal technology, because he's in thrall to the ecological left. Hey, Charles Krauthammer, Fox U and the Fox News you wrote in on. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report, sponsored in part by Velvet Revolution's new campaign, ProtectOurElections.org. Fighting for real election reform in Congress once and for all. Please join the fight against corporate influence, voter suppression, and unverifiable privatized voting systems. Sign the petition to demand election reform from Congress now at ProtectOurElections.org. That's ProtectOurElections.org. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's a long, hot summer indeed, this oil gusher. We thought we had it under control-ish.
Yeah, not so much, but we'll get to that in a moment. But first, the Asian invasion is one step closer to the Great Lakes, Asian carp, that is. Since being introduced in Arkansas, the voracious, invasive species of Asian carp has traveled all the way up the Mississippi River to Chicago in just a little bit over 15 years. Great Lakes states have been wrangling over how best to contain the carp from decimating the multi-billion dollar Great Lakes commercial fishing industry. They've even erected two electrified barriers. Now this week, biologists confirm a 20-pound Asian carp was caught beyond the electric barriers only 6 miles from Lake Michigan.
This is bad. They've been trying to contain this now for months.
For years now.
Years?
They knew this was coming, and now it's here. One step forward, two steps back. A day after Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen announced the containment cap had collected a record amount of oil from the undersea gusher in the Gulf, the entire containment effort suffered a major setback. An ROV camera apparently bumped into a vent on the containment cap, forcing BP engineers to temporarily remove it to keep slushy hydrates from clogging the pipe. BP Managing Director Bob Dudley, who is now in charge of BP's oil spill response effort, explained.
Seawater started coming up, and the crew did absolutely the right thing. Step back. Stepped off the cap because they just wanted to be sure there was no hydrocarbons because we have a flare out there.
So a robot arm hits the cap that they spent so many weeks trying to get on, and they had to pull it right back off?
Yeah, basically Admiral Allen says, you know, it's like an airport hangar down there. There's a lot of activity, and they have to be careful.
Robots.
BP engineers worked throughout the night to reattach the cap, and of course the loss of it for even a few hours massively increased the amount of oil gushing from the broken well until it could be reattached. They'll be ramping up the operation to contain more oil later today.
And so without the cap, 50,000 barrels at a minimum is gushing per day. And with the cap, how much is gushing?
Oh, who knows?
About 40,000, maybe?
Could be anywhere in there.
Great.
And sadly, two oil spill cleanup workers have died. One appears to be from a swimming pool accident, but the other has been declared a suicide. A 55-year-old Alabama charter boat captain working on the cleanup effort was reportedly despondent over the economic devastation to his business and the devastation to the Gulf. On Capitol Hill, the investigation into the cause of the Deepwater Horizon explosion continues. Congressional investigators say BP's choice to save money and use a thinner steel for the well casing appears to be hampering the ability to contain the spill now. Thinner steel casing means the wellbore itself is more vulnerable to collapse, and that could be a very, very, very bad thing. Also on Capitol Hill, the House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly to give the President's Commission investigating the causes of the disaster some real teeth with subpoena power and the authority to compel testimony and force production of documents. Only one congressman voted against the measure for subpoena power, however, Republican Ron Paul of Texas. A similar bill has been introduced in the Senate. And as we reported earlier this week, a federal judge in New Orleans issued a preliminary injunction halting the Obama administration's moratorium on deepwater drilling, ruling it, quote, a blanket, generic, indeed punitive moratorium, and saying the Interior Department did not provide enough evidence for such a broad action, which he said would lead to greater economic harm for the Gulf Coast region. Meanwhile, financial disclosure forms indicate that the judge, Martin Feldman, is invested in the oil industry, including the very companies involved in the Gulf spill accident.
This is extraordinary. How it could be that he did not recuse himself from this case, I can't even imagine. And the fact that the concern seems to be here for about 30 wells when there are thousands of them still operating, but just 30 shut down for the time being so we can figure out what the hell happened, the fact that that takes precedence for this judge, I'm glad the administration will be appealing the decision. I'm glad that Ken Salazar will be rewarding this moratorium and putting it back into place. Read about that and much more that we did not get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Subscribe for free to the Green News Report on iTunes. Listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio and follow us on the Twitters. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Money.
My father explained to me that when a fella hit me, I couldn't hit him back because they'd say we were bad and savage. So I had to stand to be knocked all around. On the other hand, I have never separated my work as an artist from my work as a human being. I've always put it even more strongly that, to me, music is always a weapon. Music is always a weapon. Always, 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 always a weapon.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
People's Mixtape.
Premiering Saturday, June 26th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
And again, let me just drive one thing home when we talk about the right wing and people who are struggling just to live from day to day. They don't give a damn. They prefer a workforce that is desperate and terrified, not one that is empowered and informed. Because the desperate work cheap. And in fact, you know, with language like this, one wonders how anybody would ever even consider voting for her. The quote from Sharon Angle running for Senate. You know, I mentioned that one earlier from her, in which she said that people who are unemployed, who are out of work, whose lives are collapsing around them in this country, saying that they are spoiled. We have a spoiled citizenry. Add to that this. Last month, at a campaign appearance, Sharon Angle said the following.
As your U.S. Senator, I'm not in the business of creating jobs. People ask me, what are you going to do to develop jobs in your state? Well, that's not my job as a U.S. Senator, to bring industry to this state. That's the Lieutenant Governor's job. That's your state senator's and assemblyman's job. That's your Secretary of State's job to make climate here a climate here in the state that says, y'all come.
Then what the hell does she think her job is in the Senate? To go and read passages of the Constitution from the floor of the Senate that exist only in her seething, fervent, sick little tiny, the pea-sized right-wing brain? Hard to say. And yet at the same time, she holds Harry Reid accountable for that same joblessness. Human Events Magazine says, what are the three reasons why Harry Reid needs to go come November? And she answers,
14% unemployment in the state of Nevada, the highest foreclosure rate in the nation in Nevada, and the highest rate of bankruptcy in Nevada. That is where people are really held Harry Reid accountable, because Harry Reid doesn't care about their jobs. He doesn't care that they're having trouble staying in their homes, and that's why Harry needs to be fired.
Again.
People ask me, what are you going to do to develop jobs in your state? Well, that's not my job as a U.S. Senator to bring industry to this state.
And yet, she's got a puncher's chance, and more than that, against Harry Reid come November. Not that I'm a Harry Reid fan. I think we know where I stand on poor Harry. Let's go back to the phones, lest I babble anymore. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, good, Gary. What's up?
Oh, nothing much, man. I was sitting here listening to you guys. I was just thinking, you know, it's like the destruction of America by XX Corporation, you know.
Yeah, if some foreign power was doing this to us, we'd be at war.
Exactly, exactly. You know, it's kind of funny. I don't really get into the Afghan war stuff too much because I know some people disagree with me on it. But I do think we should take, you know, the long view on this, is that in the end, whether we agree with Obama's position on going in or whatever, he set July 2011 as the date, you know, to pull this thing to an end. He said he came in to end the wars, and that's what he seems to be committed to doing. I think, you know, as, you know, liberal progressives, of, you know, I think we should take that long view as well at this point, because I think if McCain or anybody else was to get in there. And I kind of agree with what Brian was saying earlier. I mean, we would have endless war. We would probably, there would be no more unemployment benefits because everything would be headed toward the military and we'll end up having a military state. You know, this whole thing with McChrystal thing, to me, it's almost like an Obama Zen move because I really believe now he's pushed them into a corner, the military in a corner to where he can now take advantage of this situation and really push for, you know, the agenda that I think he always wanted was to bring these, wars to an end. You know.
I hope he does.
And I'm telling you, that is not what the war industry is really interested in. They're not interested in that. You know, that's a third branch of government. We all know that.
Sure it is. And again, I referenced Dr. Strangelove earlier, and it's hard not to, think back to that sign on the fence at Burpleson Air Force Base that said, peace is our profession. Well, what's the point in having all those stars on your shoulders if you don't get to shoot something or blow something up?
Exactly. Same thing with the guys like McChrystal or whatever. You know, of course they're going to always ask for more candy. I mean, that's just natural. I mean, that's what they want. I mean, you know, it's funny because BP is like, you know, again, going back to, you know, Destruction of America brought by XX Corporation. You know how you used to see right before the Iraq War, you know, you see all the Northrop Gunner commercials, you know, all the war, the defense industry commercials.
Oh, gosh, yes. Especially on the Sunday morning news programs.
Exactly. Paying off the media, you know, run the commercials and you'll get favorable, you know, reviews of your products. And I guarantee you, you know, this whole thing with, you know, General McChrystal this whole thing about the Afghan war being going badly, when has it ever gone good?
You know? Yes. I mean, I guess, well, you know, we certainly did whip the Taliban back there when we ran them all out. But it turned out we didn't run them all out now, did we? We just ran them all over somewhere else.
Well, first they said it was Al-Qaeda, and they ran them into Iraq. You know, these people are terrorists or whatever you want to call them, are hidden in cloaks. You can't just formulate who they are, where they are as a group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Say, well, we ran them out.
Well, you know, we killed Al-Qaeda's
population.
We killed Al-Qaeda's number three a few weeks ago. That takes us down to 8 Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
8.
It seems like we're always killing number 3 and number 2.
Yeah. Well, that's because we've perpetually enshrined number 1.
Yeah, or maybe it's just because number 3 and number 2 is like, you know, so closely one right behind the other, they just fill the role the next 2 hours with somebody else.
Right, you know, it's like pulling a soup can off the shelf in the grocery store. Another one rolls into its spot.
Exactly. All fresh and new. No blood on it. Ready to go. You know, it's really...
Well, I hope he's right. And, you know, our buddy Tosh sent me a note not too long back, and I think he kind of echoes what you're saying, Gary, in that he says hidden in the McChrystal mess are the seeds for success in Afghanistan. On several occasions, the various generals have talked about departure starting in July 2011. This is a date certain, which the GOP hates, and it's perfect. The one sensible argument for our involvement was the risk of emboldening the Islamists because of their ability to defeat first the Soviets and now the U.S. If we set a date to get out, we're leaving on our own without giving them the chance to claim credit for our departure. Had Obama done this earlier, it would have looked like he was too much of a wimp to stand up to the Taliban and so forth. So in the next year or so, we need to establish the habit among the tribes of self-control like we've seen in Iraq, and before that, Northern Ireland. In Ireland, eventually, politicians on both sides had enough at stake in the peaceful exercise of power that terrorist attacks were not allowed to be a reason for conflict. We're seeing a bit of this in Iraq, where the parties realize they'll get their country back to do whatever if they keep a lid on their a-holes.
Yeah.
So, what Tosh says is that we need to make the get-out date a formal, carved-in-stone, concrete date certain that is an official matter of U.S. policy.
Well, they've been, you know, everybody's come up behind it, you know. Petraeus has said he's for it, and everybody has said it. You know, the only person I probably, you know, from what I understand, seems to have some objections to it, obviously, was McChrystal, and let's be honest, this guy is tied in with the defense industry in general. I mean, let's be clear. These guys get out, and they go work, you know how they do. They work in these private industries, contractors, or consultants, and they're going to make a lot of money, and they have their buddies and their friends. I mean, it's almost like a branch of the government. I mean, the military is the people who make the parts for them. So, I mean, you know, of course they're going to be, you know, a little bit beholden to them. But I think the long view is America, we're going broke. We don't have the money to fund these wars just like the Soviets back in, you know, 79. So I think in that sense, you know, I think it's a good chance, too, for the Army and for Obama, because they're all in agreement. They can look at the budget and say, look, we just don't have the money to fund these wars. It's not like, you know, in the 80s and the 90s when we actually did have some, you know, discretionary kind of spending. So I think in that case that...
And it's also a matter of back before we started hanging bad paper all over China and had to depend on China's willingness to honor our bad checks.
That's right. And China wasn't sucking up as much oil, and they weren't, devaluing, in terms of the workforce and just destroying our economy because they're stealing so many jobs. I mean, I don't want to say stealing because they're not stealing them. We're actually giving it to them. But, you know, you add that into it, America doesn't have a strong labor force. You're not getting the taxes that you used to get because people aren't working.
Yeah, oops.
You know? Duh, why did you send a job away? Nobody's paying taxes anymore. You know, then we become like Brazil, where people don't pay taxes. So, unfortunately. So, I think that's really the situation. So I am somewhat in Brian's camp. I understand Mike Beloit's point. I at times have become an all or nothing person, but I found that, as you know how I am about Obama, I'm somewhat of a moderate in terms of practically getting things done. As Republicans show, they still have power enough, or at least influence enough, not true power, to stop, you know, a progressive agenda or agenda that actually is better for America. They're hell bent on destroying the country. They just are.
Yeah, not Afghanistan. This one.
Exactly. You know.
And sadly, I seem to recall one of those dodgy little letters that may or may not have been from Osama bin Laden when he said, "We will get the infidels to destroy their own country without ever doing another thing to them."
Yeah. Well, you know, the media is all complicit in this anyway, because you look at the Iraq war. I mean, that it was the biggest joke of a war of all. Anybody with half a brain knows that if Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, let's say a nuclear device, and shot anything out of that country, he would have been blown to pieces by who? India, Europe, Spain,
Pakistan, Israel.
Israel been first, of course. But yeah, I mean, so there's no way he would have made any kind of attack for this United States.
No, all of that was put out as PR solely for the benefit of the Iranians. Yeah, you better not cross the border. I got some nasty stuff here. I've used it once. I'll use it again. Don't do it. It wasn't about us. It wasn't about the Egyptians or even the Israelis. It was solely put out for the consumption by the Iranians.
But why was American media not asking the hard questions they're asking now about the oil spill and all these other little issues? I mean, they're not little issues.
But the answer,
the war is a big issue.
I can answer that question, Gary, before you get done asking it, because there is a guy with a D behind his name in the White House. You see, whenever there's a guy with a D behind his name in the White House, all of the so-called professional media get very, very, they take their job seriously, and we're going to ask hard, penetrating, and investigative questions. But the minute some guy with an R behind his name gets in office, it's hands off because frankly, the Washington Press Corps knows that those guys play mean, rough, and dirty, and mean it. And if you start asking hard questions of them, well, you won't have access anymore, and you're going to find yourself writing the Sudoku column in the Washington Post and not covering the White House anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason why, many African-Americans call Clinton the first black president, because we've never seen a president so chastised before and hung or lynched on a regular basis.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it, like you said, it's almost like they took it to another level when they went to Clinton. I mean,
well, it was a whole new world for a lot of people, Gary, because nobody remembered the way that Carter was treated at that point. They'd had a steady diet, and I don't know how much or to what extent the black community listens to talk radio. I mean, for instance, if you listen to Limbaugh or if you check Hannity's or Limbaugh's or Bex or any of those clowns' ratings, you'll find that it is routinely middle-aged to elderly, white, and pissed.
Yeah.
But anyway, all people knew was that Carter was a failure and Carter was a wimp, and it took a big, strong man like Ronald Reagan to get our hostages free. And they forget the way that Carter had been savaged.
Yeah.
And Johnson was savaged. Nixon, well, you know, everything humanly possible was done to squelch the Watergate reportage. But it was just so damn big it couldn't be covered up even by the for-profit media.
Yeah.
But beyond that, no. Republicans get passes. We've got a couple of generations worth of it's okay if you're a Republican, where the for-profit media's treatment of the president is concerned. But the fact that we have short lives and short attention spans makes it look as though it's a recent phenomenon, when in fact, Gary, it is absolutely not. I gotta roll along, but good to hear from you.
Okay.
And don't be a stranger. Take care.
All right.
Bye now. Gary calling from Maryland, and I think that's true, don't you? What we see as recent phenomenon are functions only of our short sight and our short lifespans. But it's been there for a long, long, long time. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, in the last couple callers, an awful lot.
How so?
Well, number one, as far as jobs are concerned, do you remember when they put into the dictionary the term the job?
No.
They did. The job is an acceptable term for use in the dictionary. It refers to a job with no benefits, no tenure. In other words, just a job in which you're scared to death of your employer and you do not have any right to that job. In other words, your job is no longer your property, nor will it ever be. And that's the attitude of the powers that prevail today. It is in the interest of the oligarchs, the Republicans, to not have a viable middle class. To them, that is an impedance.
And that's the thing. That's the thing that just boggles my mind. I can't imagine being so short-sighted and pig-eyed, Jim, that you don't see that the people who are beneath you are the people who are holding you up.
Well,
I don't mean you, of course. That's the rhetorical view.
Because they realize they are, you know, they don't care about people who come behind. It's I, here, me, and now. And I hate to say it, but the same thing applies to just about every spectrum of our political and economic life. I mean, look at the government today. The spirit of public service is almost dead. And I have seen it slowly die with people like the passing of Senator Kennedy and others like mine. And even the staff who serve them, the Schedule C appointees who serve at the pleasure of the senator or the member of the House of Representatives, well, you know, they don't have a real career in that. They're there just to go to Washington, get to know the right people, and to move on. There is such a high turnover in the Schedule C or political appointees who serve the members of the Congress, it's just incredible. If you don't believe it, call them and see who you get on the telephone. And if you ask for a person that you've been talking to, they'll say, well, she moved on.
No longer in this office.
That's exactly right. And there's no continuity of service. So, you know, and I guess the point of my call is, there is a degradation of public spirit and lack of continuity in those people who are in those positions.
And that takes a toll, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and any kind of representative government is extremely vulnerable to any malignant power who wishes to usurp it. I mean, of all the types of government that you have, a representative democracy is, in fact, the most vulnerable. And we're seeing its vulnerability being, well, enhanced by the economic policies that have been in place for the past, so, since 1980. Even before then, I can see it coming. It's a bad situation. And as far as the military is concerned, you know, the purpose of the military is to implement national policy. And in our case, national policy has become economic policy. Just like von Clausewitz said in his book on war, von Krieg, war is an instrument of national policy. Well, in this case, national policy has become economic policy, and with the military, it is in their best interest to keep these wars going.
Isn't it fascinating that von Clausewitz could make a statement that is so nearly identical to the same statement that Mao would make years later?
Yeah, you're right. It is.
That war is politics at the muzzle of a gun or some such?
All power proceeds from the power of a gun. But then again, Mao did say, let 100 flowers bloom, allow 100 schools of thought to contend. But I'm afraid not even the Republicans and some of the right-wing elements or whatever, I don't even think they believe in that, because the only policy they believe in is their own. They don't want to let anybody else's policy prevail but their own. And unfortunately, it doesn't look very good to me, because this thing with like McChrystal. I mean, what McChrystal did was basically fall on a rubber sword.
Oh, Jim, score.
He was in a situation in which he realized he's in an unwinnable, unsustainable war. And the president simply relieved him of an unbearable burden. But he went over there to get his ticket punched. I mean, the military is a corporation.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think I was trying to allude to earlier, Jim. What is it? This is not the military that people who love military history, this is not the same military that people who love American military history love to study. This is a completely different animal. This isn't, while there's a certain reminiscence between Barack Obama trying to find somebody to finish the job in Afghanistan and Abe Lincoln trying to find somebody who could finish off the Civil War, the generalship as between those two eras are radically different. You said this was McChrystal getting his ticket punched. For what trip? Toward what end? What did he get out of it?
What he got out of it was his 4th star and a good retirement. And then after that, he will be able to go on the lecture circuit, write books and things of that nature.
Sit on boards of directors and be a consultant.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened.
See, there's a big difference between that guy and, say, the South's Albert Sidney Johnston, who was set to become general of the entire Confederate Army had he not been so doggone noble that he insisted on bleeding to death in his boot on his horseback while seeing to it that wounded Union soldiers were treated before him. There's no comparison between the two.
Well, there's just a lack of nobility in people today, period, Bob. You know it, I know it. There's a lack of nobility and compassion and just downright respect for one another as a human being.
But also, doesn't the hierarchical structure of advancement in the modern military preclude those people with that profound sense of nobility from actually rising, Jim?
Well, I can't say that now. There are a lot of good people in the military. There are a lot of people.
And I wasn't trying to intimate that.
I know.
It's just that, you know, we used to say the cream rises.
There are a lot of good people in the military who do have the interests of the country at heart and who do serve because they wish to serve. And they wish to make the world a better place. I know that's kind of hard to realize, but unfortunately, we live in a very dangerous world in which there are a lot of forces that are, let's put it this way, they make it necessary for some man to be standing on that wall.
Yeah.
But in the higher elements, I guess the higher you go, the more you lose, and the further you retreat from what we call the FIBA or the forward edge of the battle area, the less sensitive they become to it. And you have what I call careerists like Tommy Franks, who, remember the article or the news thing that he did with Vanity Fair?
Oh, yes.
And then McChrystal going with Rolling Stone. Well, of course, I mean, that, I really think that McChrystal just, you know, for his own personal sake, he had risen as high as he could go. And why would he want to continue the rest of his life?
Yeah, because we're not passing out fifth stars anymore much, are we?
No, we're not. That was it. You know, there are no more generals in the Army like Dwight David Eisenhower, no more or Douglas MacArthur. And there's just a different mindset that is at the helm of the services. And, of course, even within the service structure, they are highly parochial. I mean, each one is there, you know, and you can call it esprit de corps, or you can call it whatever you want. You know, blue is better than green, green's better than blue, and this, that, and the other. And, of course, and there's always been a very highly spirited competition between the respective services. And they're supposed to work in concert with the other. And to a certain extent, they still do. But that spirit of parochialism can get out of hand. And with that spirit of parochialism, I think, comes what I call careerists. And you have a lot of soldiers there who have risen above field grade rank and getting into past colonel, who are getting into the politics of the situation. When you do that, then their attentions become otherwise diverted. And that might...
You know, at the risk of oversimplifying, Jim, it almost sounds as though a spirit of crass commercialism has sort of perverted the that noblesse and dignitas with which you describe the military, that a sense of crass commercialism has perverted that.
I think to a certain extent it has, and I think it's becoming more and more like that. I mean, when you are in parts of the world fighting a conflict in which there are no clear victories.
No clear objectives.
Well, I mean, they seem to, I don't know, maybe they change from one day to the next. I'm just not sure. I mean, what one seems important is not important to the other. But nonetheless, I mean, I have always felt that the situation in Iraq and in Afghanistan is unsustainable. And it is unwinnable. As you yourself pointed out, Afghanistan is in the graveyard of many empires. And I think to a certain extent.
Well, under those circumstances then, Jim.
It's going to be, you know, it's ultimately going to be our own denouement. Because as soon as we leave that area, they're going to come back in there.
Sure, and I mean, and there's not, and it's going to be where it was to begin with, but the problem is it doesn't matter if we leave, and that happens in 2011, or if we leave and that happens in 2211, it still happens under either circumstance.
Exactly, I mean this is not World War II. In World War II, we were fighting against the Axis powers.
We were clearly defined nation-state enemies.
Exactly. But here, everything is so porous. And, you know, what is policy one day becomes non-policy and is replaced by another policy the next. And it's just a revolving type of situation. It's just, it's like being on a treadmill. And there are no clearly defined objectives. I mean, what are we going to do with Afghanistan? Make it the 51st state? I don't think so.
Yeah, and then it's the same question. You know, what were we going to do with Vietnam? What is anybody going to do with the tiger once he gets on to ride, save for hang on hell-bent for leather to both ears and the tail?
Well, you know, in Vietnam, for example, the government that we were supporting right before John Kennedy was assassinated was less democratic and sensitive to its own citizens than the North Vietnamese.
There you go.
In fact, right before Kennedy was killed, the president of South Vietnam was assassinated with Kennedy's sanction.
Yep.
So there we go. And, of course,
as the bumper sticker that I used to see says, you know, karma's a bitch.
Well, who profited from the Vietnam War? Both firearms.
Kellogg Burn and Root.
Tractors. I mean, LBJ even had this huge harbor. I don't know how big that is. Like a Mulberry Harbor, okay? Like the one they used in D-Day. They floated two of them over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they floated one across the Pacific Ocean. And if I'm not mistaken, my memory is sort of dull right now. I think it was situated at Da Nang. But nonetheless, it came from friends of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Contractor.
Sure. And probably Kellogg Brown and Root, because he's the one who gave them their start.
Yeah. But like I say, you know, war is a very profitable business. And these people, these contractors, who had tremendous influence at the Pentagon and tremendous influence on Capitol Hill, they're not going to give up cash cow until they have to. And I kind of get the impression that they really are pretty insensitive to the cost of that war to the people who are fighting it in our behalf and the people against whom we are fighting. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're correct, Jim. They're fighting it for the sake of fighting it. They're being disagreeable for the sake of being disagreeable.
Well, they're fighting it because it enriches them personally. I mean, let's face it. War is one of the most...
lucrative?
As far as organization in society, war is the most effective way to organize any national society. It can do more to nationalize and to cause to come together or to coalesce more effectively than any other power I know. And behind that comes, of course, the prosecution of any type of war and the money that's being made from it. I mean, when our greatest generation fought World War II, there was a time there when we thought, well, we've learned our lesson and we've seen what has happened when we allow bad people to assume control in countries and have their way into appeasement. But we really didn't learn any lesson at all. Because in less than just a few years, we were fighting another type of war. Cold War, whatever you want to call it. Cold War, of course, itself generated a lot of money for private contractors.
And, you know, we talk about the Cold War, Jim. The fact of the matter is, it wasn't as cold as we would like to pretend it was. If you look, and I saw a stunning post over at Crooks and Liars last week, the tally of nuclear tests, you know, and just because they're tests doesn't mean they're not horrifying. The tally of nuclear tests over the course of the Cold War was on the order of 2,000 nuclear explosions on this planet. That doesn't happen without consequence. And, you know, we radiated, you know, with above ground bursts, most of Nevada and Utah and a whole bunch of the rest of the Western United States with fallout. We bombed ourselves.
Well, what about the underground tests?
Right.
I mean, they certainly didn't do a great deal to add to the stability of the Earth's mantle and crust now, did they?
Of course not.
I don't think so.
This animation that I saw is fascinating. I'll try to find it and send you the link just to watch these little blips taking place. And it's, you know, just little blips that sit and slowly, it starts in 1945 and it counts forward and until you come to those 2000 blasts. And yeah, that was not a very cold war. It was just cold because it was deemed cold because the two principals were not having at it directly. But, you know, ask a peasant who was napalmed in Vietnam how cold it was. That crap burns hot.
Yeah, it did. But, of course, in the Cold War, we had more strategically outlined enemies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was the United States as one superpower versus the Soviet Union, another superpower. But each one seemed to have a sense of equipoise. And now that equipoise, and as far as equipoise is concerned, control of nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, whether a biological, chemical, NBC, nuclear, biological, chemical, well, has fallen into the hands of less responsible powers. And we're talking about nuclear proliferation in Afghanistan. I mean, not Afghanistan, but Pakistan and India. And I think Stephen Hawking said this. If humanity is allowed to exist 100,000 more years, that the chances of a thermonuclear global war, at minimum, is 1 in 10. Because of the proliferation of nuclear weapons.
Right, and that's not a bet. I don't want that card game.
No, I don't either. No. I can get better odds than a street corner.
Well, I play the lottery.
Play three-card money. But I mean, you know, it's just the way it is, and
that's fun when you win those first couple of hands of three card money, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You feel like something.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you stay at it long enough, and you lose everything you have. But I don't know. I'm just rambling all over the board here, and I don't mean.
Well, no, Jim, you didn't ramble. I think you gave a lot of valid insight to all of this, and I thank you very much, sir.
Well, I appreciate your saying that, and I know there are other people that might want to call, so let me get off this phone.
All right, you take care, Jim.
All right, sir. Good night.
Bye now. That sense of nobility. You know, when you take a kid who's grown up on the prairie 1,000 miles from the nearest salt water, and that kid turns into to Admiral Halsey? Or a kid from the plains of Kansas, and that kid turns into Eisenhower? That's a functioning structure. But and I'm going right back to the phones. John Fox is on and waiting with some breaking Australian news. But just to put this out there for consideration, I'm no fan of any draft. But is some of this crass commercialization of our military? We'd like to live in a world where militaries are not necessary. But as humans, and very, very dangerous, bloody-minded, kissing cousin to the chimpanzee that we are, we like some of this. There is an element of any given society that likes being ruled by the lizard brain. And we do. And the way you prevent against that is by making the experience be a shared one. And when you have a professional so-called volunteer military, you begin to run up against problems because the experience and the loss is no longer uniformly shared by the nation. I'll probably get hate mail over that. I don't want my kids going off in a draft. But I don't know how else you constrain wild-eyed presidents operating at the behest of a corporate military-industrial congressional complex
from using an idle military that otherwise is just sucking up money and sitting on its ass. You know, it used to be the old saw was that the one thing you learned in the military was to hurry up and wait. Well, that waiting drives the money crazy. It's the two vultures sitting on the branch, one vulture looking at the other and saying, I don't care what you say, I want to go kill something. Just say it. John Fox is with us from Australia this evening. Are you there, John? John, do I have you? Oh, I lost John. John reporting that there has been a palace coup in Australia this morning. And it is rather unsettling. I wish I still had John here because I think his input would be valid and valuable. Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister of Australia, has been tossed out. And he has been replaced by another Labor leader, Julia Gillard, I'm assuming Gillard, who will become Australia's first female Prime Minister. And standing alone, this would be an interesting enough story as it was, but as it stands now, with what happened in the UK, this begins to look like falling dominoes. Granted, two dominoes do not make an entire game, but this was done, if I'm reading, and I am at a disadvantage because I'm not fully conversant with all the personalities involved. But Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd stepped down, or was voted out, when he refused to contest a race against Ms. Gillard. And the Labor Party over there, which you and I would ostensibly recognize as our side of the fight, is crippled, divided, and as the Australian Broadcasting Corporation notes, traumatized. The Australian Workers Union and Health Services Unions jumped behind Ms. Gillard. And the entire support base for Kevin Rudd fell completely apart. And he's the first Australian Prime Minister not to serve out an entire first term. And now the Australian government faces elections in a matter of possibly weeks. And taken in context with what happened in Great Britain, it begins to look like a trend. And one wonders at what point or what role was played in the, if any, in the shenanigans being perpetrated by the opposition here in this country. Because waveforms travel. And is this a model for what the Republicans hope to accomplish in 2010? To gain, you know, because you know what will happen. If they gain control of the House and or the Senate or both, they will reduce anything Barack Obama wanted. They'll reduce Barack Obama to a lame duck even before he gets a chance to run for re-election. This is disturbing business.
and it has been manipulated and fully implemented by a right wing that is much more organized than we ever will be. Witness Texas Representative Louis Gohmert. Louis Gohmert, a freak among freaks. Check out these comments from the floor of the House of Representatives and see if you don't want to vomit.
Brilliant man named Thomas Sowell. And I didn't vote for Barack Obama in 2008, but I sure would have voted for Thomas Sowell.
Now, it is important to note that ringing endorsement of Thomas Sowell by Representative Gohmert over something that Thomas Sowell has read that Gohmert will then read on the floor into the record, the official record of the House of Representatives, as follows.
This man, well, his article says quite a lot. His editorial says here, and it's just been posted this week, but he says, when Adolf Hitler was building up the Nazi movement in the 1920s, and I'm quoting from Thomas Sowell in his editorial, leading up to his taking power in the 1930s, he deliberately sought to activate people who did not normally pay much attention to politics. Such people were a valuable addition to his political base, since they were particularly susceptible to Hitler's rhetoric and had far less basis for questioning his assumptions or his conclusions. Useful idiots was the term supposedly coined by V.I. Lenin to describe similarly unthinking supporters of his dictatorship in the Soviet Union.
Listen to this. This isn't at some damnable teabagging rally out in East Tioga, Alabama. This is being read into the record on the floor of the House of Representatives.
And this isn't in the article. This is my comment. But we do have useful idiots today who are hard to say, wow, what we really need is for the president to be a dictator for a little while. They know not what they say.
And neither does Representative Gohmert. He doesn't know the definition of a dictator under the traditional, under its traditional meaning within Roman history, because that's where it comes from. And previously, the same concept was used in among the ancient Greeks. Their word was tyrannis, from whence we get tyrant. Tyrant and dictator, they have pejorative connotations now. They did not in their original constructions. But never mind the scholarly the Babylon on my part. The fact of the matter is, Representative Louis Gohmert stood on the House of Representatives and positively and affirmatively quoted from a man who, for all intents and purposes, called Barack Obama Adolf Hitler. And therein lies the difference between our side and theirs. Dick Durbin was harpied and harangued until he apologized for a comment he made that wasn't even a comparison between German military, Nazi military, and the American military. He didn't compare the two. It was a hypothetical. Louis Gohmert and the right-wing media machine went into full sweat condition alpha, full overdrive, to demonize both Senator Durbin and that comment. Until Senator Durbin was reduced to publicly apologizing from the floor of the Senate. But Louis Gohmert praises this right-wing thug, Thomas Sowell, criticizing nothing more than setting up an escrow account to help out the people whose lives BP has destroyed. And in that description, uses a quote to compare Obama to Hitler, to compare a tepid response against a transnational corporation to the systematic murder of 6 million and the beginnings of a war that killed 50 million. And no one will condemn Louis Gohmert or force him to apologize because we don't have the structure to compel it. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican, especially if you are that bloody fang stand-in for Montgomery Burns, Louis Gohmert. Excellent. So that's the program. Thanks, everybody. We'll be here tomorrow evening for Friday on the Front Porch, thunderstorms notwithstanding. And hopefully we will talk then. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. John Fox, webmaster, web designer, jack of all trades, host of All Foxed Up, which will be back. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Lottie in the chat room, Gene and Susan, our news ninjas, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed columnist is Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy. Our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. And my head writer is David in Tennessee. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
All right, let's try this again. For those of you who... For those of you who were sort of left dangling last night by my abrupt disappearance, please understand it was nothing more dire than a thunderstorm that rolled through and took down my series of tubes. You know, I have a feeling the internet would be significantly more reliable if it was a big truck. But it isn't. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes that is apparently
more than susceptible to lightning strikes.
But what it boiled down to, I later found out after much of the swearing and so forth, because I like to swear while I work, was that apparently one of our several uninterruptible power supplies that runs this joint has gone to its long home. It has earned its just reward, and it is dead as a stump. So what happened is the lightning took down the power. The uninterruptible power supply's battery did not kick in, and screw us. But the thunderstorm continued for quite some time, and as a consequence, couldn't keep the inner tubes going. With any luck, that will not happen tonight. And I say with any luck because it has happened all afternoon long. Okay? It just has. See, we're getting, because there's no such thing as global climate change, and there's no such thing as anthropogenic global warming, we're having August in June right now. The stuff that we expect here in the hills and hollers in August is happening, yes, in June. And as a consequence, we're getting pop-up August-like thunderstorms created by convection currents and the like that raise holy hell for a while and then quickly move on and disappear. Wonderful, huh? But at any rate, I'm back. We're together again. For some reason or another, a little glitch in the chat in the website is preventing me from joining you in the chat room. So my apologies to those of you who would otherwise be seeing my smiling cyber countenance there. But you know, these things happen. We'll get it all sorted out. Let's see, a little program note for you. I wanted to let you know, A, that the current fundraising has more or less gone flat, and I understand that. I more than understand that as we move toward getting all of this business taken care of. I've already got the ball rolling, so with any luck at all, cross your fingers, throw salt over your shoulder, don't walk under ladders or step on cracks. We'll get this taken care of one way or the other. We will. We really, really will. But at any rate, no, a totally separate program note. Coming up after the 4th of July, 4th of July weekend, after the 4th of July weekend, we've got something really special happening. Many of you who have been with us for quite some time may well remember the considerable talents and manifest just plain old-fashioned intelligence and decency of Dr. Bill O'Brien. He was with us doing a show for quite some time until he got loaded up with so many duties at Concord University's Beckley campus out at the Irma Bird Center that it simply became physically impossible to do a show. But the horn never strays far from his thoughts, his hopes, his ambitions, and his ideals. And so Dr. Bill asked me the other day, he's got a grant program going on that concerns teaching the history of the basic founding of the United States of America, okay? Real history, with real facts, not the made-up baloney bogus BS, that Glenn Beck fans, whose Constitution of the United States exists only in their heads, espouse. No, real history, real...